On PFW in progress are not those of the New England Patriots, its affiliates, or any of its partners. Content may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
The following takes place between 12 p.m. and 2 p.m.
This is PFW in progress.
The quarterback, two receivers lined up to the left, one to the right. There's a flanker lined up to the left behind the quarterback.
Okay.
He gives the ball. No, he doesn't. He doesn't get the ball. The receiver goes all the way over there to the left. Once the quarterback has the ball, he fakes to the left. No, he fakes to the right. He doesn't fake. He thinks about faking. He pretends to fake.
PFW in progress with Fred Kirsch.
It's not like you could use a shower. Oh, listen, you can think what you want about my personal hygiene, but please don't waste any water. That's bad policy.
Paul Perillo.
So that's what opening up a can of whoop-ass feels like.
Son, you just opened a whole case of whoop-ass.
And Andy. And Andy?
There, girl, you're seeing.
Seeing? I see a lot of girls. I see a lot of guys, too.
I think that's sexy. You ever been with a guy and a girl at the same time?
Oh, yeah, plenty of times. The other night, I was with my mama and Coach Klein at the same time.
Andy Hart.
And I like Vicky, and she likes me back. And she showed me her boobies, and I like them, too!
Eric Scalavino.
I want you to think about all those mean people. They're going to be your tackling fuel.
Tackling fuel.
We're going to use them to play football.
Tackling fuel.
For now, anyway.
Ooh, I'm a football player.
Coach, I'd like to tackle him right now,
please.
Not yet. PFW in progress, part of the Patriots Football Network.
Oh, no! We suck again!
All right. Ooh, jeez. Coming in hot. Welcome to PFW in progress.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah. I
think that might have been me.
I scared myself when I went onto the mic.
Oh, okay. That was my mic.
Well, it's Tuesday here.
Tuesday
after a tough loss in Seattle, 24-23 to the Seattle Seahawks. And obviously a game that just got away from the Patriots. 13-point lead in the fourth quarter, and they blew it. There's no other way to say it. They did. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about, as the week goes along, we'll talk about the Jets. But, of course, Tuesday is all about talking
ranting
about the
game. Ranting
and raving. Yep. Even if they win, we rant and rave on this show. So this will be no exception. Paul's here. Andy's here. Kevin's in the booth. Eric is not in today. No.
Haven't seen him.
All right.
It's Tuesday.
Webradio at Patriots.com is the – oh, that's right. He spent all day doing the
– conference calls.
And the analyze.
Yeah, don't get me started.
He analyze. He puts the anal in analyze.
Don't get me started.
Web radio. Again, hot. Jeez. Web radio.
Correct.
At
every time you do that.
Yeah. What?
Actually, not every time, apparently.
Web radio at patriots.com is the email address. 508-298-0398 is the ACE ticket hotline.
Fred, now you want to do your little, you know, doctor act and help people by telling them the good news is the Patriots failed in all three phases of the game.
No, but...
I'm mocking Fred because of something he said on our TV show earlier.
I think that you can look at all three phases and say, oh, they could have done better here, they could have done better there. And I think with the exception of right now the safety play, you can honestly, objectively say they can do better in all those phases. They have done better in all those phases. Tom Brady has done better at quarterback in
yes,
those.
Sure.
Bill Belichick has managed the clock better. You know.
Yeah, but the problem is those are supposed to be the givens.
No, I know.
And then these other issues. So I see what you're saying. It can be better. It's not like there are people that have concerns about the secondary saying it can't be better. It just stinks. They've drafted guys that stink. They can't. The coaching stinks. It's not going to get better. You're right. But the problem is those are supposed to be the givens.
Right.
And in the years when the givens don't come through, when the givens come through, when Brady and Belichick are more often than not great, that's how you end up 13-3, 14-2, and consistent. But if those are now lumped in as problems during some weeks,
right,
that's how you end up 3-3 through six.
But I think for the balance of the season, we're going to be able to count on those givens. I think so.
Maybe.
But I'm not sure that you can say that against quality opponents. And that's what we have to wonder about. Because I think that there have been commonalities to the losses against better teams. Now, I'm not counting when you just lay an egg against Buffalo last year or Cleveland a couple years ago, but you know the Giants games, the game at Pittsburgh, the game in Baltimore, and this past game right now. And I don't know what Seattle is. I'm still not convinced that they're a very good team. Hats off to them. They beat the Patriots. I didn't think they would. I was wrong. All right, we'll get that out of the way. But I'm a little concerned about some of the things offensively that we just say, well, I know he can play better than that. I absolutely know. The Patriots' offense is going to be one of the best, if not the best, in football this year. But what is it when the game's on the line against the quality team? What is it while protecting a one-score lead in the fourth quarter? Because this year, while protecting a one-score lead in the fourth quarter, it hasn't been very good. Yeah. Not just Sunday. It wasn't real good against Baltimore either in that situation. And I don't really like the way they closed the game against Denver when it was a 10-point game. You know, the last three possessions of that game were punt, turnover and downs, and fumble.
No, they were at one point 31.
31-7 turned into a 31-21 game right. with the other team on the 10-yard line and 5 minutes left.
Right. Yeah. You know, and you can't always say, well, the other team's defense stepped up. There has to be some accountability there for the offense continuing to, you know, the defense is going to adjust when they're behind 31-7. They're going to expect you to be doing certain things. Well, either you do them better or you, you know, keep the pedal on the metal and don't go into a shell.
And offensively, as much as I do think they're going to be good and they can be better and they can close games and they have all this talent, I'm starting to be a little concerned about the health of the unit. Because it seems like, you know, Welker is probably the healthiest of your key weapons, and he got his ass kicked yesterday.
He could barely put his shirt on after
so,
the game.
I mean, Gronkowski has a hip injury. He was coming in with an ankle injury. He took a huge hit to the back the other day that certainly looked like it affected him after that. Brandon Lloyd dives, leaves the game. You know, they say it's just a shoulder issue. Aaron Hernandez, in my opinion, looks like he may have come back too quickly from the ankle. I thought he looked limited on the field, and then he started to limp more as the game went on. So he's not going to be healthy. And if Welker is feeling the effects of those big hits in his sternum or his body, whatever, all your weapons are now dealing with something, and maybe you're not quite as good as you think, because they were pretty healthy last year. I mean, Gronkowski made it through the whole year, had a great year, and part of the reason he had such a great year is because he was healthy all year until the very end. If you're going to start to deal with all these guys limited, and that's going to have a cumulative effect that'll hurt this offense.
And unfortunately, it looks like that's the way the league is kind of shaping up, is that there are important players, you know, like the ones that Andy just said, you know, that's – you know, Gronkowski, Hernandez, Welker, you know, you even want to throw in maybe like Sebastian Vollmer, who evidently went through a battery of tests before the game under the eyes of the training staff. Those are key parts of the offense. Look around the league and the guys that are going out everywhere. I mean, Baltimore's defense, major blow, losing Webb and Lewis, and Nada's not going to be himself
right.
all year, even if he's able to play the way they say he's going to be able to.
It's a battle of attrition,
Terrell Suggs.
Well, it is a battle of attrition.
Terrell Suggs wants to come back, but what's he going to be?
You know, and that's another reason why this isn't a jump off the cliff Tuesday, because, but you look around the league, there aren't a lot of good teams in the AFC.
Don't have to tell me.
The Patriots don't have to be an elite team to win the AFC East or emerge as one of the seeds even. You know,
I told you to wake me when they lose their ninth game, I'll be worried.
Right. So that's one thing to look at, you know, is the other teams. I mean, you look at just the scores this weekend, and it's obvious no team is emerging as you know who the best team might be right now? The Giants.
In the NFL?
Yeah.
That's a funny one, because that changes every week based on the performance.
It does, but
this is how the Giants play, though.
They have
the Giants know when it matters. They've done that for the last 5 years.
Yeah.
That's, I think everybody else is in the Giants boat now, and some guy actually said that, you know, why can't we be like the Giants? Well, you're kind of being like the Giants. You're kind of pussyfooting your way at 500 through the season, and if you get hot in December, yes, I think you're capable of going on a Super Bowl run.
Yeah.
This is what the Giants do every year.
Right.
I think it's interesting the way the words that I heard to describe the Giants over the weekend, and I'm not saying I necessarily disagree, but now it's which team has the capability, when playing its best, who's the best? And the Giants seem to be that flavor of the month.
I don't know.
You know,
if I agree with that.
Like they step it up at San Francisco, mm-hmm. and they go out and dominate the Niners. You know, whereas they might the week before at home against Cleveland, they were down 14-0.
Right.
You know, like they kind of slogged their way through the quote unquote meaningless games, do just enough to win. But when they have to step it up, they go to Green Bay and they beat the Packers.
Well, that's
last
the thing,
year.
You know. But like you look at that game, everyone said, you know. Even the 49ers, yeah, we have a chip on our shoulder. We didn't want to lose that game last year in the playoffs, blah, blah, blah. This means a lot to us to win. Giants go to San Francisco, and they beat them, and they beat them pretty handily.
They beat the bag out of them.
Yeah.
Nobody is good.
But I don't want to turn this – but I think that, if you look around the league, I still have confidence that the Patriots are going to be in the playoffs and they're going to be just fine. I really do. The other thing, things that we were worried about, I'm a little less worried about now, are the tackles. I think the tackles had a pretty good game.
I thought they were pretty good, too.
Except for Solder falling on Brady at the end of the game. That was kind of a little weird to see. But
well, that was kind of it looked funny, but I agree with Andy. I thought the tackles played pretty well on Sunday.
Did you hear Bruce Irvin's name all game? No. I mean, I think they did a pretty good job keeping Brady clean for the most part.
Yes, you know? No question. And that was one of the big questions entering the season.
And I can remember during the game me saying, Brady, you got to get rid of it. And he wasn't, but he didn't get sacked. And, you know, I thought he held on to the ball a little bit too long at times, and I was worried about it. But they did a good job on the edges protecting him. So, you know, and that was one of the strengths of the Seahawks is that type of pressure. I think the Patriots did a pretty good job. That's a positive I think I take out of this game. You know, I think the overall offensive movement of the – they had breakdowns, you know, in the red zone. It's particularly at the end of the half, no doubt. But I think the way they move the ball and I know we don't want to use weather as an excuse, but by the end of the second quarter in the second half, it was pouring. Mm-hmm. It was a torrential rain with some wind. So that was a factor. You know, whether or not any player, and they shouldn't, will say it, it was a factor, you know?
No, I agree. I agree to your larger point.
It looked like it affected Wilson's throw on the touchdown.
No, but I think it's probably more of a factor on a ball coming hot on a short pass than it may be for a rainbow down the field, you know?
Maybe. I don't know. I think the problem, and Paul and I just argued about this, I the secondary stinks. I'm sorry. I don't mean to, like...
Well, I mean,
take cheap shots. But.
I think, you know, last year, my thing was we thought McCourty was going to be one of the things you could rely on. He wasn't. I think that was a big part of the breakdown this year. I think this year it's Chung. I think Chung is, you know, you looked at the safety position. Okay, they're bringing in Gregory, and now it's Chung and Gregory. Wow, that, you know, that right there, they should be better.
I was on board with that.
You know, so was I. And
yeah, me
and
too.
And Gregory's hurt. I understand that. But even before he got hurt, you know,
there were calls for him to stop playing.
Yeah, there were some limitations there. But, you know, Chung has been...
Bad.
Not, you know, well, I don't know about bad, but he's unreliable.
Been bad.
But
he's been bad in coverage.
Well, see, that's the... I see him covering too much. You know, they move him in the slot like he's this versatile coverage safety. I don't think that's what he is.
Well, somebody's got to cover at the safety position, you know?
Somebody's got to cover in general.
Particularly
that
when you get a lead, they're going to throw the ball.
But who's doing their job back there?
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, if somebody said, pick your best defensive back that you if we boiled this down to one-on-one, pick your best defensive back right now.
I think defensive back McCourty, without a doubt.
I don't know. I might agree with you, but...
I don't agree with that.
Well, who you got?
I don't have one. I can't give it to somebody.
No. Well, that's my point. I don't think McCourty's been good. I think he's been the best of a bad secondary. I do think McCourty's the answer, in my opinion. If you made me pick one of those guys, I would pick McCourty. That doesn't say much about the secondary because I think he's had a bad year too.
Yeah. You know,
you guys are probably right. You guys are probably right. But I he's given up a ton of big plays.
No, I know, but...
A ton of big plays. And I don't know exactly what's supposed to happen on that game-winning touchdown, but you're playing some sort of zone where he's passing him off, right?
Mm-hmm.
How does he let him just run by him if he's not covering him?
They said Wilson bid on the play action.
McCourty. McCourty is up like 2 yards off the line of scrimmage at the snap.
Right.
His job ostensibly was to let him go and pass him off to the safeties.
Right.
It was some kind of zone.
Right.
How does he let him run by without touching him off the snap?
Without
I don't understand
him.
That.
Yeah.
Like, that doesn't seem to make sense technique-wise to me.
I don't know.
I'm not a defensive back in the NFL. I don't know what this was supposed to happen. I know sometimes we can get in dangerous territory when we sit there and break it down like that. But I just don't get how he's not supposed to cover him, not supposed to hit him, supposed to just pass him off to the safety and
jam him a little bit.
And he just is able to run free.
Do nothing because they only had a couple receivers on the field. So once he goes by, there's no one threatening him for literally like 25 yards in any direction.
And we saw the all-22 that they showed the replay on the game. And what did he end up doing on that play? He covered the deep left side sideline. There was no one there.
Oh, yeah, nothing.
So what good is that?
And that's one of those things where I get back to these guys just don't know what they're doing or don't have an instinct for what they're doing because – I would be very, very dubious if you put Ty Law out there and his job is to cover whatever, you know, the first 15 yards zone, I think he would say, well, I'm just running with him because there's no one else over here. I'm just going to go with him. Yeah. I'm not, rather than
it's
standing here
a two-man
useless,
route.
Right.
And I think Ty Law would have recognized that.
That's my point.
Well,
absolutely.
If you listen to Bill Belichick at EEI.
Then calls don't matter.
No. If you listen
that's
to,
what he said.
If you listen to Bill Belichick and EEI, it's pretty clear that they guessed that they would run. He said, you know, the Seahawks in that situation with that amount of time and the two timeouts, they will run. And they showed just two wide receivers. McCourty has been a good, you know, guy in the run support game. And so maybe I'm sure that's what McCourty was looking for. But still, yeah, why not jam him a little bit? Why not slow him down just a little bit and then look inside? You know, I don't know. Yeah. It's a
it just
question.
The whole play made no
know.
Sense in any level. Yeah. Bill's whole, you know, it's not the play call. We just have to defend it. To me, you're a nickel in that situation. You have an extra DB on the field. I know they're a running team, but they're going to try to throw the football, and you need far more help covering than you do playing the run. This run defense has been good enough so
know,
that even if I'm
but,
taking one guy away.
But even if they were in the nickel, I mean, that guy, that fifth defensive back's going to be up close to the line anyway.
No,
he wouldn't have been involved in that play.
He wouldn't have had to have been.
And the other issue,
and by the way,
not to nitpick,
part of it.
Not to nitpick, and I didn't hear what Bill said on EEI yesterday, but they only had one timeout, and there was only a minute and 18 left. So if Seattle wanted to run the ball, you should have thanked your lucky stars that they ran the ball.
I would.
So if you're protecting against the run, that's poor coaching, in my opinion. Well, let them run.
But I mean,
and then the other issue is Nate Ebner. Why we decide Nate Ebner is one of our best guys to have back there when we have guys like Sterling Moore and Rozai Dowling who, A, have more experience as Patriots, but, B, have more experience as defensive football players in their life, as their career in high school and in college and even with the Patriots scheme the last year and a half.
Somebody wrote that Moore might be dealing with some injury.
Well, he has an injury.
Yeah.
He's on the injury report with a hamstring or something.
But why, you know, Kyle Arrington got replaced by Dennard. Okay, no problem. He wasn't performing well. You make a change. I have no problem with that. He's not good enough to be on the field after that over Nate Ebner? You can't figure out a way to have three corners and one safety in the game? Isn't that better than Nate Ebner? And I don't mean this to be a shot at Ebner. It's not his fault.
It's an experience.
It's not his fault.
Yeah. No, I hear you. Yeah.
How many times has he been in that situation in his life? 0.0. Literally, how many times did he run cover two? You know, like limited amounts of times of everything for him. He just hasn't done it.
You asked me the week before against Denver what I thought about Tavon Wilson's first start, and I said, "Well, it looked to me like he was late a lot, getting where he was supposed to be." Again, when sometimes it's like, you know, you put a little cold cream with the makeup. You know, it doesn't matter when you win the game by 10 points. Well, I think you saw it a little bit. You already have a guy who's making his second career start back there, and you throw another guy, as Andy said, who hasn't even played in his life, never mind in the NFL. That would have been the equivalent of putting Stephen Neal on the field his rookie year to finish the game at guard. That's how little he played in college, you know, as a defensive player. I don't think he, and again, I don't mean this to sound disrespectful to Nate Ebner. It's not his fault. He just doesn't have that experience. Marquise Cole, there's another example. I forgot about him.
Yeah.
He wouldn't have been a better option.
He's played.
He has played. He's played as an extra defensive back.
Right.
Sterling Moore, Kyle Arrington, Marquise Cole, were they all hurt? None of those guys were a better option than Nate Ebner? I don't get that.
Yeah. So I can't defend that either. The
even
personnel.
If you, you know, even if you wanted to
there.
Put.
But
you know,
I can defend the play. The play was there. They had two guys on the guy. You should be able to cover that.
See, that I agree with you with because Andy and I said it immediately. I mean, it's weird that they were in like. You know, base defense, but it looks like they're just playing a soft cover too.
Right.
That's supposed to prevent that very play.
Right.
You know
what
I mean? Overzealous. I mean, Wilson got overzealous.
He bit on the fake, he got caught flat-footed, he made a mistake. That, I agree with you on that, Fred. I'm not necessarily questioning the base defense decision as much as I am the personnel in the base defense.
I am a little bit. I want more little fast guys that can get back faster. I think they can stop the run. I'm not worried about them having six guys, seven guys.
I just think that the bigger problem to me is
they needed a touchdown.
Right.
The bigger problem to me was the personnel on the field. I agree with you. I would have been in nickel. We said that. We said it immediately.
Yeah, it makes no sense. And maybe it's because they didn't want to play guys. I mean, maybe they don't feel comfortable putting whoever, Cole or these guys. I don't know what's going on back there, but none of it is good.
But, like, even in that game, earlier in the game, they felt comfortable enough to have Kyle Arrington starting. Then he's out. They felt comfortable enough to have Sterling Moore on the field as a nickelback, ostensibly. Then he's out.
But I said to you earlier, it's like when they slot him, it's like the draft board. Okay, this guy was a starter, now I move him to the bottom, and he has to work his way all the way back up. He's not even, now I go in order through the depth, and up, says Nate Ebner's next on this depth chart here.
Yeah.
It's strange. It's very strange.
It is strange, and you know, you look at it, they scored 24 points, but it was Russell Wilson, and I know that he had a good game.
He had a good first and
fourth
quarter.
First of all, 24 is a lot.
Yeah, better game than we thought he would have, but it's still Russell Wilson, so that doesn't bode well for the pass defense at all. You know, I thought they had pretty good pressure, but with his athleticism, he was able to get out there, and they weren't able to contain him in the pocket. And with a guy like that, I think that's what you want to do. You want to keep him on the spot in the pocket. They let him get outside, and again, I don't want to use the weather as an excuse, but I'm going to. I think it's hard. You know, when you're a defensive lineman rushing upfield, when it's wet out there trying to make those cuts, it's tough. I saw a lot of guys on the ground, you know, Chandler Jones among them, you know, trying to get around that corner and just losing their footing. So I think that had a little bit to do with it. I think on a dry day, I think, you know, they would have probably even had more success getting at Russell Wilson. So
I didn't see the pressure necessarily that you did. And
matter of fact,
I think
were way out of the pocket.
I think but by design. He had a ton of handoffs, counter action handoffs one way with a short roll the other way. The game winning touchdown, he was not under pressure at all. He rolled back to the side by design to throw the ball to give Sidney Rice time to make that double move. I thought the problem with me with the pass rush to me is right now it's all Chandler Jones. He's been phenomenal.
Ninkovich did okay, but he was playing.
But no one else has really given him much of anything, really, right now. And, you know, Jermaine Cunningham's gotten some opportunities, hasn't taken advantage of them the way he was in the summer.
Right.
You know, he'd be a guy that you'd be looking for. You know, get back to, the personnel stuff. Jonathan Fernandez is a guy they wanted to use like this, that they thought they could get something out of. You know, he's not in the picture. I mean, they need someone other than Chandler Jones to come up with big plays. And you know, I think you're asking a lot of a rookie to do it every week. He's got 3 strip sacks. I mean, someone's got to come in. You know, Ninkovich has come on a little bit lately, but they need some more. They need more consistent pressure. They either get a sack or they don't get anywhere near the quarterback.
Yeah. I mean, what do you think about how they roll the dice on defense? Do you think they take enough chances?
That's a tough question to answer.
Well, I've always – what do you want them to do?
Well, I'm talking about corner blitzes. I'm talking about linebacker blitzes. I'm talking a little bit more about, you know, run blitzes.
I've yet to see their guys that are good at blitzing. I really don't think they've shown these guys. Now, I know Cole is a guy that did it a little bit for the Jets in his time there. They've had these guys that have done it sort of elsewhere, but I haven't seen these guys that seem like they are able to. And I think there's an art to that in timing it, in getting not giving it away early. You know, it's kind of a whole phasing there. Mayo, every time, you know, he runs into a guy. You know, I used to joke, James Sanders did. I just don't see these guys that have shown me the ability to be impact players. And you're taking them out of another job when you do that. So you're rolling the dice, as you said, and I don't see the payoff. I've yet to see a guy that I'm comfortable with the payoff on.
And the other part of it is the reason I think it's so tough, and I've been one of the guys, Fred, I'm with you. I think that they do need to get a little bit more aggressive, but I think it's 33 passes of 20 or more yards. By far and away the most in the NFL that they've allowed. That's without blitzing. How many are you going to allow when you start blitzing? Because let's face it, even the best blitzers don't get there every time. To me, I'd rather die with, you know, my boots on. I'd rather be going after it and say, well, you know, at least I made them execute under the gun.
Right.
I made them make a tough play because.
But
you know
will
what?
You? That's
play,
my point. I don't
play,
know that you
the
will.
The play that they made to win the game on Sunday was not tough.
No, it was like almost a Hail Mary.
But I also...
Well, no, it was routine. It was the opposite of a Hail Mary.
Well, you know what I mean.
It was like, dropping back to find a wide open guy in
a Hail
end zone.
Mary, the guy usually stands back there and you don't really rush him that much. You just, you know...
But your whole scenario implies that you're going to make it tough on him. I'm not sure I've seen them ever make it tough on him.
That's why I said it's a tough... I understand.
You know, you run into the back and you're just playing patty cake with the back.
That's why I said it's a tough question to answer.
The quarterback has one less guy he has to deal with in the back end because you're not putting any extra pressure on him. You're just playing patty cake with the running back who picked you up or the guard who picked you up.
I have a hard time combating much of what Andy just said.
In theory, I would love for them to give more pressure, to roll the dice a little bit, but I've yet to see them in practicality show me they have the capability of doing it.
It's easy for me to sit here and say it can't get any worse.
Yeah, it can.
But it could. Yeah. It could get worse. Because you could, you know, instead of holding them down for a couple of quarters like you did
right.
on Sunday, it could be four quarters of that.
Now they don't need to come back because they hit a couple 50-yarders in the middle of the game and they're winning in the fourth quarter. That's what's frustrating because you go through that game, they had, right? They hadn't scored. They had 10 points on the board.
Yeah.
And you're like, actually, they hadn't really scored at all. They had one terrible drive and we got rid of the problem. Kyle Arrington was the problem. He gave up 74 yards on two throws. They scored a touchdown. Other than that, they have 3 points. I'm feeling pretty good about my defensive effort, right until the bottom fell out and they started giving up the big plays again, and Russell right. Wilson started making plays again.
And I do like, and you know, if we're going to pick a bright spot, I can't say he's been the best because he hasn't played enough. But Dennard, to me, even this week, following up on his first appearance against Denver, I thought was competitive again. I thought he got turned around a little bit on the touchdown, but that's a tough play. That's a tough play in the end zone. And I know we fixate on the whole turning the head thing. Did anybody watch Seattle? And see how many times they didn't turn their heads either. The touchdown to Aaron Hernandez in the end zone, the guy was right on him. Right on him. Never turned around to make a play on the ball. Because it's hard. When you're chasing your guy, you're trying to get in position, I know it's not this, you know, this magic elixir turning your head as the cornerback. That's not the be-all, end-all. And I sympathize a little bit with McCourty and Arrington when they talk about that because it's not as easy as that. And I think you saw it with Seattle on Sunday. They had some plays that they had. Brandon Lloyd was covered like a blanket on a couple of those plays. He didn't get much separation at all. But they were completing passes because guys weren't looking.
Yeah, Brandon Lloyd, I got to say, yes, he's catching passes. He's getting first downs. But rarely does he just catch a pass and with the ability then to make a play after the catch.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's all falling down or falling out of bounds. And I don't know why that is.
Because he's not open by that much, in my opinion.
Paul's been on that since day one okay. in practice.
I didn't even think he got separation in practice.
He doesn't get much separation.
I think his ability to contort his body is amazing.
Yeah,
some of the plays he makes on the sidelines, that was the book on him, and rarely is the book as accurate as this one. He really is impressive to watch. Now, he's had like four catches this year that I saw live that I said – to myself,
yeah.
No way.
Oh,
no way was he in bounds.
Exactly.
No way was he in bounds. And you watch the replay.
Son of a bitch, he was in bounds.
He was in bounds.
Yeah. It is amazing, but there's nothing after the catch. It's,
right.
It's where he catches it. That's where it's going to be.
And some of that is the routes he's running. I mean, they've clearly said he's good at that, and we're going to run a lot of sideline routes.
But a back shoulder fade should not be.
Well, you don't get after the catch too many back shoulder
fades.
You're stopping and coming back,
right.
And the DB comes back, but he's late. So after you make the catch, he tackles you.
Yeah, but
a lot of back shoulder fades don't lead to a lot of
plus.
Yak.
He's even on the back shoulder fades, like Baltimore specifically. I thought he had like three of them on Kerry Williams. Kerry Williams didn't bite on the downfield play. He was right there, but the throw was low and away in. Brady's been accurate, and then Lloyd contorts himself. He's like almost in a crouch going down as he catches it, and Kerry Williams is right there.
I think some of it's the routes he runs.
Yeah.
And then he did have the opportunity late to make the play down the sideline and dove, and he was out of bounds.
Right.
You know, that was the one time that looked like they tried to get him downfield.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure that there were other routes during the course of the game that weren't thrown his way that he went downfield, but that was the only time they threw it to him downfield.
What's John Rook going to do? Nitpick Tuesday started at 12 instead of 2.
Well, I just
there was a lot of plays in this game that, was, you know, you talked about the red zone and the inability. They had, when it was 20-10 in the fourth quarter, I think it was like a third and two in the red zone. They ran Ridley off tackle for nothing. You got to get that. Because mm-hmm. not only you get a chance to get the touchdown, you're taking two more minutes off the clock, you know, mm-hmm. with a 10-point lead. Those are the big ones. You know, when you kind of leave it hanging, like 10-13 is really no difference to the defense. You know what I mean? They'll give you the three, but they got to make sure they don't give seven because they can't go down three scores.
Right.
You know, you
and that
get,
is
you gotta
still
get
the
that.
Legitimate question about the running game. As good as the numbers they put up, can they run when they need to run in a running situation?
They couldn't at the end of the game.
Right.
That's for sure. You know. All right, Web Radio, Wes Welker, though, unbelievable.
If you're going to take one positive from the game, it's not just the production. The I just laughed when he goes to the sideline and he's going to the trainer like, this hurts, kind of putting his hand in front of his whole upper body and chest. And then three snaps later, oh, it's 3rd and 10. We better get Welker on the field. First down, Westwell. It's like, it's unbelievable.
It really is.
Even on the last... even taking into account like contract and any, just, we're going to beat up on this guy. You take a couple plays, but when 3rd down, get your ass back out here.
Even on the last drive, you know, when they had the 2 Ridley runs for 1 yard, it was 3rd and 8. They went to Branch on the quick slant. I looked at Andy and I go, if you're Seattle, you got to put 3 guys right on Welker right at that Seahawk in the middle of the field.
And even and they got the 50, what was it, 17, and then he got 50.
15.
Like, even then, it was just a little out of his range of his normal comfort
zone. And he got blown up twice.
Oh, he got blown up more than twice in that game.
Julian Edelman would be on the way to the hospital.
Right.
You know, sorry to say that, but, you know, he gets hurt.
It's true.
He gets
hurt. As Jerry
hurt.
Callahan said this morning, you know, it's amazing that you know, he's starting for the injured Julian Edelman. I mean, it becomes more comical by the week that he didn't start the season in this role.
The only thing that could knock Wes Welker out was a torn ACL.
Right.
That was it.
No other human has. It's
right.
Just himself. God, he made a cut, you blew out, you're out. But all these other hits, he just hops up, and it's ridiculous. And I said to Paul, I come in from this game, and there you got two viewpoints from the same game. You got to sign him. He's the key to the offense. And then the other side is, there's no freaking way you can sign him. You see the hits he takes?
Right.
He's 31.
Eventually
he's not going to be able to keep doing that.
Eventually his head's going to come off.
And I said to Paul, as much as we joke, and it's great, and if you love football, you love what Wes Welker does, there's a little guilt in me when I love it, because in the back of my mind, I'm saying, what's he going to be like in 10 years?
Yeah.
Head-wise, body-wise, stiffness-wise. Like, it's sort of like last week when the Chiefs lineman said, you know, we know we're giving up something in life.
We're not going to live as long.
And Welker is doing that right now, and it's great to watch, but there's a little guilt in me when I watch
it. But, you know, that was a positive, and I think I'm okay. I'm okay after this game. I'm not.
Well, you were prepared mentally to lose.
Yes, I was.
You were, and I found that telling.
Yeah,
I found that telling.
Right.
I'm being dead serious. I'm not. I found that very interesting that you, because you never feel like that. I mean, it's very rare that
now,
you think
this
there's
week,
a chance.
I am not mentally prepared to lose.
No, nor,
and you
nor
are not
you
capable
be.
Of taking the loss either.
And
you would be.
And your big picture thing.
Take your shoelaces away from
Andy
your
and I
Patriots
are on board
speakers.
With your big picture thing, and I mean, I think we might have conflicting reasons why, but I think in the long term they're going to be fine.
Right, they haven't lost.
They're
going to
win
yet.
A lot of. They're going to win a lot of games. Now, the main reason that I feel like that, and probably you'll disagree, is because of who they're playing, and I just don't think they have the teams that can pressure them into a loss the way that Arizona, Seattle, and Baltimore did in different ways. Now, Baltimore didn't do it defensively; they did it offensively. But the other two teams they played. Tougher defense against them, kept the score down, and therefore stayed in the game and found a way to win it at the end. I don't see a lot of teams coming up that can do that beyond Houston and San Francisco. I just don't see it. You know,
yeah,
we'll
but the problem with that, beyond Houston and San Francisco, okay, so if you're negative and say those are both losses, okay, that's 5.
Well, that's
right.
Why.
And the way you're playing, you're going to have another hiccup.
Right.
That's 6.
Yep.
Now you're 10-6, and you're, as much as I joke, you can lose 8 games and still make the postseason.
Right.
That's why I don't think everything is fine.
That room for error
is getting smaller and smaller.
Beating the Jets and Buffalo and Indianapolis, to me, isn't going to make everything fine. Just like down the stretch last year, I'm listening to the radio this morning, and our buddy Pete Shepard, former Patriots.com radio personality here, telling me all about, everybody forgets what happened in the second half of the season last year. In the second half of those games, they were number one in the league in points allowed. Well, yeah, why? Tyler Palko.
Tim Tebow
twice. And Matt Moore.
Or Loves.
Rex Grossman. I mean, they played a backup quarterback literally in each of the last 7 games. A backup quarterback.
Yeah.
Vince Young. That's why.
Right.
Vince Young's
Vince
not
Young.
Even in football anymore. And he threw for 400
yards. Remember how
yards.
He lit him up?
Right.
It's amazing.
So, yes, you're going to improve, but what are you really better at?
Right.
And
but
we won't know that until we get to the playoffs.
But it's such a roller coaster. You're going to ride because they're going to have another, like Buffalo, where they score 30 points and a half, and you're like, wow, they're pretty freaking good. And, you know, Spikes forces a fumble, so it snowballs a little bit. You're going to have some of that, and it's the roller coaster that I think the league is going to ride this year. But we should touch on the Richard Sherman, you mad bro, comments to Tom Brady.
You mad bro?
I thought it was tremendous. you know, A, I don't know how to do it. I think it's funny that he put a photo with him and a little text in it. And but I also don't have a problem with it. You know, the Patriots over the years have always been a team that did their talking when the game was over. You know, they would have little snide things to say. They wouldn't say it all week, and then it would kind of bubble over after the game or even on the field with some bird flapping and things of that nature. And even more so when Brady says, come see me after the game. Well, Tom, you told me to come see
right.
you after the game.
You and Earl,
coming to
right?
see you. Yeah,
no,
you and Earl.
There's no doubt that Brady was jawing with him earlier.
Right.
Must have been.
And, yeah. you know, he basically gave him the scoreboard, and Sherman just came to remind him at the end of the game that the scoreboard
but
had changed.
It's interesting what he said, though. And
yes.
You know, about the being a one-man team, and you're just the Brady Bunch, and you're not a team, you're just you.
I found that very interesting.
I think the most interesting part is the gimmick offense.
Yeah.
It's a gimmick offense.
Those are insults. Those are big insults, not just to Brady. It's to the rest of the teammates.
But is it a concern to you that it might be true?
No, it's not a concern. Look, I think Gronkowski's fine. I think these are good players that Brady has around
but
him.
But is it a gimmick? Is it a gimmick offense?
Well, here's what I think. I like that he said it, and I like that it was heard, hopefully, by Josh McDaniels and by the rest of the team, because if, you know, if they are, then they need
that. But I don't, I mean, the team part questions me, because that makes me wonder, are we going down one of those roads where they didn't have chemistry and locker room, whatever. But gimmicky, I mean, to me, there's no player less gimmicky on the planet than Rob Gronkowski.
Right.
I just don't think he's a gimmick. Now,
if you look what they did last week with the, you know, no team does that, what the Patriots did last week. You know, every team plays up-tempo, every team plays no huddle. But to mix it like that and just run to the line and just snap the ball as soon as you get there, nobody does that in the NFL.
But teams have done it over the years.
Not
no one
like,
does it for consistently
yeah.
because it puts a lot of stress on everybody
right.
involved.
Right.
Not just the good, but the bad.
You know, so right at this point in the NFL, that is a gimmick.
But that's not who the Patriots are. It's not like they've gotten all their success in
but
the last 5 years based on that.
But the Seahawks were looking at last week's tape. And that's what he was talking about, you know.
I think he's a little cuckoo. Just
well, I do
if
too.
We want to start.
I don't think anything beyond that the Patriots do is gimmicky. I don't. I mean, why is Brady being good?
Well, I think some teams like Seattle, you know, they're not a set you up to think we're gonna pass and we run.
Well,
they're just gonna run.
Meanwhile,
whereas
Sidney
the Patriots
Rice throws the ball down the field. I mean, that's kind of a trick play.
Well, that was a trick play.
Yeah.
But
no,
their
but
offense
I think,
isn't predicated on
I think
no,
more
trick
so
plays.
The we'll spread you out and then run and then that kind of whole back and forth is what somebody like that would be referring to.
But I think
to.
That's the NFL today is to get defenses on their heels. You know, you do try to run when they think you're gonna pass and vice versa.
Well, there's a little
that's
bit
the whole
of
idea.
That's certainly the Patriots NFL. That is certainly what the Patriots want to be. Yeah. There are still teams that, you know, the Pittsburgh Steelers, we're going to line up and do what we do. Beat us if you can.
Yeah, but and they throw the ball all the time now.
No, I right, know, but I'm just saying, philosophically, they don't start on a Monday. How are we going to trick the other team? How are we going to, you know, I think the Patriots do that more than anybody, try to win a mind game on Monday, whereas some other teams try to win a physical game on Sunday.
And this is not to suggest that one of those approaches is better than the other.
I actually
like the game plan approach.
I think the way they want to run offense this year is how offense should be run. You should go to the line and say, well, what are they doing on defense? Do I run myself into this heavy front or do I throw it?
Right.
I think that's, I mean, to me, that's what offense is about. You know, it's not so much gimmicky, that stuff, oh, trick plays, but what are they, especially when you have a heady quarterback, when that's
right.
the strength of your team.
Exactly.
I think that's what you should be doing.
Right. But I like him insulting the team because, you know, the Patriots traditionally have used that kind of stuff. So.
Seahawks, Patriots, Super Bowl. Sherman Brady.
Yeah, I don't.
Two.
I'm consistent. I don't like that. I thought Sherman was out of line at the end of the game.
Did you hear him begging for an NFL Network interview?
Oh, yeah.
He was like, and you won't put me on NFL Network, but you go back and tell them, and then they put him
well,
on this morning.
Well, they had him on this morning.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't like that stuff. I mean, I'm not going to kill him or anything, but I don't like that. I didn't like the way the Patriots acted after some wins. You know, the one in San Diego is the one that gets the most attention, is the most memorable.
Doing the lights out there.
Yeah, I
love it.
I think if you want to talk, if you want to be like the Jets and be jackasses all the time, then stay true to yourself and be a jackass all the time. More power to you, but don't give me the button-down vest approach, I'm classy and professional, and then act like a jackass after you win. To me, anybody can talk trash after you win.
By the way, who was Rex Ryan arguing with? Who said that he should come here and lie down and not? Why does he think?
Well, he's been doing that forever.
I know,
he's trying to pump his team up into thinking that they can win this game. If you think we're going to roll over and die, you got another thing coming.
But who's he talking to?
He's talking to his team.
It's just funny to me. It's like, okay, yeah, we don't think you're going. You know, we think you're going to try.
He's in a Paul Perillo argument.
Yeah. Oh, plus if you're the any of these shows, they all think they're going to die.
No,
you've been watching the last 3 weeks.
I thought that they would bounce back last week. I think I picked them, didn't I?
No. That's not.
I'm more important.
You don't
than
think their effort
Stephen
was called?
Smith
you don't think their effort has been called into question the last 3 weeks?
Oh yeah. Well, the
whole that's what
team.
That's what Rex Ryan is talking about. That's who he's arguing with.
Their effort?
Yeah, they rolled over and died against San Francisco.
I didn't question their effort.
Oh,
the Bills,
God.
I questioned
their effort.
Did
you
Bills,
watch that
I questioned.
Game?
No, I don't watch any games.
Well, then how could you not question their effort?
Like the Bills, I'd question their effort. The Patriots game and then the next week.
I mean, the San Francisco players were openly saying they quit. They stopped playing in the second half.
I just don't think they're that talented.
Chris with a TIN's been on the line for a while. Hey, Christian, how you doing?
Well, I'm better than the Ravens fans, I guess.
Yeah, that's a tough day for the Ravens fan. That's
chances of that losing both of the guys on the same day. That's pretty tough. Listen, team's gonna be fine. We all know that. You know, it's six games. I think I've been through enough of these through the years to know that. You know,
he's talking
about
the Ravens.
Stuff that happens in October and you know isn't gonna make a difference.
You haven't been too many 3-3s six games into the season though.
No, but we were 5-3 last year, coming off back to back losses. You know, and I thought the world was ending then. And, you know, they brought it all the way to the Super Bowl. Now I know they had a crappy schedule, and it's true. But, you know, they did go down the stretch, and they got lucky, which, you know, when you get to a Super Bowl, a lot of it's talent. But, you know, you get some luck in there, too.
Mm-hmm.
So, but that happens. But I wanted to drive on the point that you guys made at the beginning, just this year in the AFC. And it really is up for grabs. I mean, I know Houston getting blown out, Sunday night, obviously, has everybody like, well, they're not that great. I think Houston's still the team to beat in the conference. That's my opinion. I don't think it's Patriots. I think it's the Texans.
Yeah, I think I'd agree with you right now.
Plus,
right
if you use the Fred Kirsch thing, maybe the Packers are going to be back. And if you get blown up by the Packers before the Packers stunk early this year, it would have been an okay thing. Oh, well, you know, the Packers can do that to people. The Packers have the talent. And you may end up saying, you know, the Packers, that kind of catapulted them.
I think that's what you are going to say, because
so
that was
not
a special game for them.
Right. So, yeah.
And if you watch the game, I mean, it was a blowout. I mean, the Packers, but there were so many plays that were pivotal in that game that were so close. And I think I heard someone talking about this yesterday. Aaron Rodgers was just unbelievably good in that game.
Did he play the position
in that
as
game,
well as it's been
in
played?
In that individual game, yes. I mean, he was not throwing to wide-open guys.
No, everything was on
like Russell Wilson.
Everything
Incredible.
Was perfect in that game. Plus, the fourth down penalties on Houston were crushers. Cost them 14 points. So that's, you know, yeah. I mean, give Green Bay credit for going into Houston and laying down a whooping, but I agree with Christian. I don't think that necessarily dismisses Houston from the equation.
No, and it's just it's wide open. And listen, we're beating it to death now the past almost 48 hours. I'm going to continue to beat it to death probably the whole week. Yeah, the secondary is terrible. It's awful. And there is no guy best player playing right now. It's who's not playing the worst. I mean, that's really what it is. And I guess it's McCourty this week. Next week it could be someone else. I don't know. But it's the drafting. The drafting's been horrendous. And they've tried. I scream at the top of my lungs if they weren't trying to address the issue. He has.
It's not even just the drafting. It's Lee Bodden.
Yeah.
Sean Springs.
Yep.
You know, guys that they brought in. Steve Gregory. Now, the book's not out on him yet. But, you know, they did. It's not just drafting. It's free agency, too, that they've tried to improve that area, and they just haven't been able to do it since they got rid of Asante Samuel.
And you know what one of the things I thought of when I saw Wilson get toasted was, do you remember when, right after the draft, and there was all the uproar, I can't believe we drafted him, he wasn't a second-round pick, and we started to get, like, phone calls and emails from people at Illinois or at Ohio State or at Michigan State, and they were shredding him. They were saying, oh, I've seen that guy get beat. And that's the first thing I thought of is, you know, is that what people expected who saw him play in the Big Ten? And I hope not. He seems like a really nice guy. He seems like he has athleticism, talent. But,
yeah,
you know, if he's
going to
bite on that fake every time, then, yeah, he's going to suck as a safety. I'm sorry, because you're going to get those double moves in big games, and it's going to happen. So that, I hope that's not a precursor of more to come from him.
But that should be teachable, you know, where
– But you can't.
Just don't – you know, in that situation – it's okay if he beats you short.
But it wasn't a short or long thing. It was, is he beating me long to the corner or is he beating me long to the post? He's getting beat long one way or the other. And he decided, I'm gonna bite on the corner, not the post. And he's going to the post.
All right, Christian, thanks for the call.
Thanks, guys.
All right.
See you, Christian. Keep your chin up, bruh.
Is it possible, Andy,
that
he's thinking, I have to get to the corner quicker because I don't have
on the backside.
I don't have health there.
Sure. But that's not teachable. You can prepare, but you can't teach the exact feeling the guy has at the moment is what is being challenged, what's my reaction. He felt he was being challenged towards the corner on the sideline. His reaction was to go that way.
Yeah.
And when you're not playing well, when you're not confident, when you're not smooth, you know, there's so many times you get caught out of position. That's you overreact. And I don't think you can teach that because there is no way to recreate that moment except being in that moment.
Let's go to the Ace Ticket Hotline, 508-298-0398. Chester from Portland, Oregon. I ran into Chester at the fan gathering Saturday night.
Nice.
Hey, Chester.
Yeah, keep it down over there. I'm still nursing my hangover from this weekend.
Yeah.
Hey, Freddie, thanks for that shot of Patron, by the way. Thanks to you, I ended up in a Seattle jail half naked with a Patriot sock on my unit.
That's okay. Yeah, good. I was worried about you.
These things happen, Chester.
Yeah. Guys, what a weekend. You know, too bad about the ending. But, you know, this team concept, you know, I'm concerned because, you know, we've always been known as winning as a unit. You know, no pun intended here, Fred.
Right.
You know, everybody's picking apart about Tommy. You know, throwing up nearly 60 passes, that is not our style, you know. And I realized Bolden got hurt late. You know, I was wondering where Vereen was a little bit.
Me too.
You know, I guess we can rest our laurels on the fact that 4 points and we're 6-0. I don't know if that's a good thing or if it's a really alarming thing. You know, this secondary, I'm done with Chung. I mean, you know, Chase Blackburn can guard a long ball. You know, I know Wilson got shook out of his boots there on that last play, but I had a bird's eye view of that thing, and boy, was that ugly. Oh,
yeah.
Man. Good thing I had a neck roll. As many times I looked up to the sky for answers. good Lord. I know all I came back was a B-Lo looking at me saying, long bombs and penalties.
Chester bringing it today.
Yeah, the script.
Guys, red area, 21 points. We only come back with 3 on those missed opportunities. We really got to retool. The bottom line is that our whole division's 3-3. You know, it's obviously not time for panic, and we just got to thank Parity for saving us here, you know, as we kind of make the turn. But, guys, great catching up with you in Seattle. And, Paul, Andy, hope to meet you guys in the future. You guys take it easy.
Thanks,
all
Chester.
All right, Chester in Portland, thanks for the call. Let's go to Jeff in Vegas. How much money did you lose this weekend, Jeff?
Buying lunch Thursday.
To the contrary.
Swimming to the contrary, Fred. Very much swimming in money.
Yes.
Thanks to not listening to us, he took the over,
Jeff,
and he won.
Jeff finally went on his own and won.
I don't know about finally. First of all, that Chester guy is absolutely hilarious. Oh, my goodness. Two, Paul, right you are. I mean, to have all three guys, Paul, Andy, and Pac-Man, adamant about the under, and then to go over and hit it, and then you have these idiot callers like the guy from Brighton. I think his name was Brian. They're like calling in saying, you know, I don't think we're giving Seattle too much respect. There's absolutely no way Seattle can win the game.
And yeah, that's the guy that yelled at me, if I recall.
The one problem I would say with you, Jeff, are you proving yourself an Andy Hart? Because you'd rather be right and lose the game thanks to 14 points that lost the Patriots the game, or you could have had your team win and you would have been wrong. So which did you prefer?
I would far prefer losing money and being wrong and having the team win, because money is just a thing. Money can be replaced. But these losses, you take those with you when you go.
I mean, we were a minute 18 away from the Patriots and the under. You know, it's...
Guys. Oh, yeah. A bounce either way, a play either way, you know, I agree 1,000%. But to be, and Barry Incion and Shippers can call me on this, I think I'm around 70% over the past 2 years, which isn't too bad on just one team. Moving on.
Well done.
What did our old? Thank you. what did our old friend Bill Parcells once say? You are what you are, right? You are what your record says you are.
And I would say that's accurate.
And for all the fans calling up, we're 4 points away from being undefeated and all this stuff. I mean, this team cannot run out the clock, and they cannot stop the other team when they need to. And it's how they've lost two Super Bowls. And now, I hate to say it, and again, you can hang up on me after I say this, since Spygate, they can't close out the games, and they've lost, blown seven leads or whatever that stat is that's not going around since 2007 with the lead. And there's no way you lose all three games they've lost this year. There's no way you lose those games.
Wow. All right, Jeff, thanks for the call.
Thanks for lunch on Thursday.
I mean, back in the day when I used to dabble in what Jeff does, I had a rule that I never bet against my team because I didn't want to be right and have them lose. So I never would bet. So he's really hardcore.
Well, to be fair, he didn't bet against the Patriots.
He just did the over?
He took the over, and to get to the over at that point in the game, he needed to lose, basically.
Yeah.
But
he did put a quarter of a unit?
Quarter of a unit or
on
something.
On Seattle on the money line?
The money line, yeah. So he did kind of bet against the Patriots, I guess. Yeah, he did.
He's got a problem. What do you want me to tell you?
Right. ESPN just did a feature with Teddy Bruschi ranking the hierarchy of mediocrity. All the three, there's 11 3-3 teams. He had the Patriots third.
I just want to welcome
behind
the rest of the
Green
world
Bay and Denver
to my NFL that I've seen for weeks now. Crap ass.
Years in reality.
No, but this year you could tell right from the early going was worse.
Bruschi put Denver in top of the Patriots? Really?
Well, my guess is that's kind of a projection on Manning and that team, and I would think. I mean, I didn't see it in terms of hearing what he had to say, but I think you could sell yourself on, we had some tough losses against some really good teams early. That's a good springboard win we just have. We're going in the right direction. We're going to be way better when we all get used to me and I get used to you late in the year.
Didn't Teddy also pick Denver to beat the Patriots the week before?
Yes, he did.
So he might just think Denver's better than the Patriots and feels like if that game unfolded a little bit differently, it might have been a different outcome.
All right.
I would disagree with that, but that might be what he's thinking.
Food's here. We got the call stacking up. Emails are coming in. We'll get right to it after this.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. An exciting Patriots season is here, and Ace Ticket is proud to be the official fan travel partner of the New England Patriots. Ace Ticket is your trusted source. We have the best seats at the lowest prices for all your favorite Boston teams. Ace Ticket is now selling Celtics and Bruins tickets to all games, with free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square or right across the street from Boston Garden. Call 1-800-MY-SEATS or visit aceticket.com.
My name is Terry, and not too long ago, I couldn't tell a first down from a touchdown, a flea flicker from a flea circus. But then, I got NFL Mobile from Verizon. I can watch every Thursday, Sunday, and Monday night NFL game live, right on my smartphone.
Nice call on the game yesterday, Terry.
I told you they couldn't stop the run. Plus, with access to NFL Network, I can watch highlights whenever I want.
Huge fantasy week. How did you know to start Mayo?
Woman's intuition, I guess. And with NFL Red Zone, I won't miss a touchdown on Sunday afternoons.
Up top, T-Mac.
You know it.
Offense is looking good, huh, Terry?
Good? They've been lethal in the red zone, Tim. Lethal. Rookie.
With NFL Mobile on Verizon 4G LTE, no one will know the game better than you. Call *NFL to get it now. Verizon, official wireless provider of the New England Patriots. Airtime, message, and data rates may apply. Available on select smartphones. Coverage not available everywhere. Remember, don't call or text while driving.
Sullivan Tire and Auto Repair is teaming up with Bridgestone Tires for an offer that's going to make you and your family very excited. Now through September 30th, when you buy four select Bridgestone Tires at Sullivan Tire, you could receive a $70 American Express gift card or your very own Wii gaming system the whole family will love. See SullivanTire.com. Offer valid August 27th through September 30th, 2012. Mail-in claim form required. Cards issued by American Express Prepaid Card Management Corporation. Wii systems given away on behalf of Bridgestone America. Nintendo is not affiliated with this promotion. Certain limitations apply.
This is Rob Gronkowski. I get lots of mail from fans asking me how they can be more like me, Gronk. It's easy. First, just head down to Dunkin' Donuts and pick up a freshly made bakery sandwich. Second, get a sweet nickname. Third, bench press 225 pounds 28 times. That's it. You're just like me, Gronk. Now hurry into Dunkin' Donuts and grab a bakery sandwich today. Gronk runs on Dunkin'.
Price and participation may vary. New England Patriots and Patriots and related logos are trademarks of New England Patriots, LLC.
What would make your life better? Start with better banking from Sovereign Bank. More than a checking account, better banking is a package of financial solutions with preferred rates, debit card cash rewards, and online banking with bill pay, along with the flexible options you need to help make your everyday a little easier to manage. And now Sovereign is part of Santander, one of the strongest, safest, and most successful banks in the world. That's what we call better banking. Sovereign Bank. Member FDIC.
Want to be a Patriots season ticket holder? Join the Patriots season ticket holder waitlist and get in the game. Be first in line to purchase Patriots season tickets as they become available and receive exclusive access to the Patriots ticket exchange and other amenities such as access to playoff tickets, Gillette Stadium concert pre-sales, and much more. Get on the list. Get in the game. Visit patriots.com/the list to join today.
I love,
love,
love this card.
With my Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card, I earn more cash back for the things I buy most.
Cash back for the things I buy every day.
I earn 1% cash back on every purchase, everywhere, every time.
2% on groceries.
And 3% on gas. Automatically, no hoops to jump through.
It's as easy as 1, 2, 3.
That's 1% cash back on a cut and color.
2% back on food for the neighborhood barbecue.
And 3% cash back on getting the kids to soccer practice and football and baseball.
Extra cash back on groceries and gas. That's my kind of card.
Earn 1, 2, 3% cash back for the things you buy most with the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. Apply online or at a Bank of America near you. Quarterly maximum on grocery and gas bonus rewards. To learn more, go to bankofamerica.com/getcashback.
Finally, a card for the real world.
Copyright 2012, Bank of America Corporation.
At the Patriot 46, play action fake by Wilson. He's back to throw. He looks, he fires it long and deep. His man is open, should be caught. It is. Touchdown. Saw that one coming with a minute and 18 to go. Seattle takes the lead on a 47-yard touchdown pass.
Now's cash money.
You know, I got to say, I know this is Gil's last year, Gil Santos, voice of the Patriots. I was listening to some of the game afterwards, so he had a good game. He called a really good game, and he called this. He saw this one coming. He said, "I really think the Patriots are setting themselves up to lose this game." And he didn't say it like, you know, with 2 minutes left in the fourth quarter. He said it a lot earlier than that, and he was right. I thought he had a really good game. So anyway, Gil Santos. 508-298-0398 is the Ace Ticket Hotline. Webradio@patriots.com is the email address. Let me take a couple of calls here, then we're going to go to emails. Maybe we'll make the second hour email devoted because we've got a ton coming in. One that I just want to read this one limerick. Now, hold on. It was funny. It came in earlier. Oh, here it is. This is a cheer-up limerick by John and Lynn. He says, a writer who took off every Tuesday trying to boost his skimpy payday, he found nothing paid worse than bad art and Fred Kirsch, except making $5 the hard way. All right. Let's go to Ken in North Carolina. Hey, Ken.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Good.
What's up, Ken?
Better than me, I'm sure.
Well, I don't know.
I just had a cookie, so I'm feeling pretty good.
I'm glad to hear that. I haven't had a cookie, but I'm still hurting from Sunday. You know what? What I see every week is this. If you want to beat the Patriots, you throw a long bomb down the center. Because...
Or the sideline.
Or the sideline. I wouldn't limit it to the center.
Because
I think Flacco did it down the sideline. But I agree with you. I think they're the easiest team to game plan for. You have to take some chances down the field.
And that's what they all said afterwards. Sidney Rice said it.
Our linebackers. That kind of keeps them from doing blitzing. And I'm beginning to wonder about Brian Flores and Josh Boyer. I mean, this has been a constant problem. These guys, the players, we can blame it on. But they're not stupid. These guys are football smart. They've gone through college. These are guys that I really wonder about the backfield coaches.
Yeah, but the problem is, as you said, the problem has been consistent and the coaching has not. They've changed guys back there at various times. I mean, Matt Patricia was back there last year. He's your coordinator now. He was your safeties coach. You know, Brian Flores is new to this job. You know, they had Collier. They had they've failed to find
Corwin Brown.
Corwin Brown. They failed to find any consistency in the coaching in the back end. They've tried new coaches back there, and that's why that combined with the fact that I still always believe whatever the coaches coach is what Belichick tells them to coach, that they're not given a lot of, you know, autonomy and to decide how we're going to play this and the technique we're going to teach here.
I'm sure about that, but, you know, somebody's got to be able to tell these guys, you got to turn around and look. Or you got to have this feeling.
I mean, well, I agree with you. You got to have this feeling part, but I don't know that that can be coached.
Yeah, that is instinctual, I think.
You're right.
That's a player.
Absolutely right. That is something in the player. Tom Brady has it most of the time.
He used to.
Yeah, used to.
I'm just kidding, Ken.
No. Well, you know, we're seeing that now.
Then it gets back to, if you're talking about players lacking something that they need to have, then it gets back to the criticism of the drafting and bringing in players to turn the secondary over that haven't panned out.
Yep, and that is up to
Nick Caserio.
Yes, and Belichick.
Yeah, I was being a little sarcastic. To me, ripping Nick for the draft picks is like ripping Boyer for the coaching. The real ripping should be the same guy, Bill Belichick.
Yeah, and it takes more than a few years to fix the mess that Pioli left.
I didn't know where you were going there.
I love the way he started that. Absolutely. Yeah, you know, Ken, it's...
The good thing is, Pioli is now with Indianapolis.
What's that? Thanks
for the call, Ken.
What was the last part?
I don't know.
Okay. But the thing that, you know, it's so the high, whatever the percentage is, the overwhelming is on the players. They're not good enough in most cases. And I think that you look, and Andy talked about all the different coaches. Look at all the players that aren't here anymore, and tell me which one of them is making an impact.
Right.
Asante Samuel.
Okay, but you got to go back to 07 for that. He left after the 07 season.
Just kidding.
But like all those guys they drafted.
No,
Terrence Wheatley, Darius Butler, Brandon Merriweather, you know, stop me when we get to a guy who made an impact somewhere else.
That's why you drafted the wrong guy. Like, literally, you drafted the wrong guy. Was it
That's what I'm
Was
saying.
It Wheatley
it's
they
talent.
Took right in front of Terrell Thomas? And Terrell Thomas goes on now. He's had injury since. But
right.
He developed into a Giants' best cornerback. That's how close, you know, it's spot in the draft. You took the wrong guy.
It's way too early to say it, but they had, you know, and I think ESPN Boston's Mike Rodak tweeted out something about the moves that they made in the middle to the late part of the draft this year. Remember when they sort of traded down to acquire later picks and they sort of ruined our Sunday by not allowing us to get out of there early? They picked Jake Beckett in the third round and acquired some other picks. They dealt some picks. A Vanderbilt cornerback who we both liked. I think his name is Casey Hayward, mm-hmm. I want to say. I'm not sure if that's his name. I know I get him confused with Casey Hampton, but I think it's Casey Hayward. Yeah, he's
Casey
a corner.
Hampton.
No, but the name. I'm saying that's why I'm not sure if it's Casey. He has three picks already. Now, he had two of them the other night, and neither one of them were great plays by a defensive back. So I'm not, you know, Tavon Wilson has two picks already, and neither one of them did he do anything on, really, other than catch the ball. So I'm not just saying, well, he has three picks. That means it was a great pick. I'm not, but he is a guy that you could have picked that has made an early impact for his new team, and you decided to acquire later picks so you could get a rugby player in the sixth round.
I think there was tone there.
There was definite tone there, but it's a factual shot.
To
I mean, that's
fair,
what they
the rugby
did.
Player is playing.
Yeah,
I think I saw him with his back to the paws. It was going over his head, running down the middle of the field on Sunday.
He was like the third line of defense on that play, and all three lines of defense failed miserably.
Yeah, you know, so there's some things that are a little bit curious and. To me, it all gets back to talent. They're just not good enough back there.
Yeah, but that's Bill. I mean, this has been a problem long enough where you've said,
we've
got
to
fix this.
He picked them all.
And Fred's right. You know, if some of the veterans had been better, if Lee Bodden were still here, although...
Lee Bodden was okay.
No, I know.
But,
and he got hurt.
He's out of football
now because I'm assuming he has a bad back.
And Fred's point was dead on. I mean, they tried it. They brought in guys, and most of them didn't pan out.
Right.
They, you know, Delta O'Neal, You know, there's, right. there's an endless
list. But
they
never
of
brought
guys.
In a guy.
Dwayne Starks.
They always bring in Jags.
Right.
They always try to buy cheap and
yeah.
win high.
Yeah.
They've never said, like, Houston went from a bad defense to a good defense by signing Jonathan Joseph to a big money deal. The Patriots have never even, in my recollection, even considered, like, they might be interested in Jonathan Joseph or Dante Robinson or any of these high-level cornerbacks. It's just they're not willing to commit $50-something million.
And they weren't willing to commit to keep their own.
Who was
right.
the guy from Miami that they brought in this year that never even
Will
made?
Allen.
Will Allen.
Will Allen. He had a pick for who?
Right.
Started for the Steelers the other day.
Did he have a pick in that game, did you say? I thought you said something about Will Allen.
Oh, I didn't see it.
But wouldn't you have rather had Will Allen on that last play than...
Well, not necessarily.
No?
I thought. Are you sure that's our Will Allen?
Oh, no. I assumed it was, but maybe not.
Why did I think that we put him on IR?
Oh.
I thought we
put our Will Allen on IR.
Oh, I thought we cut him.
Never mind. that last 15-second stream of consciousness by Andy and Paul.
Maybe Robert Gallery could have been better on that.
Randy Moss, get a big body back there in our Hail Mary prevent defense.
Let's go to Patrick.
Now he sounds like the University of Miami guy.
Patrick,
do something.
Patrick,
stick
him. How you doing, Patrick?
Good. How you doing? So I go back to the point I stress every week: 4-minute offense is terrible. Every time the Patriots need a first down in a critical moment, for whatever reason, they can't get it. The crew there mentioned a few moments ago that the Patriots have got to be able to get a first down sometimes running the ball. They've got to be able to run even when the other team knows they're going to run. I've been saying that, and they can't seem to do that either. But regarding the secondary, I think that you got to roll the dice now, and let's change some parts. McCourty to safety is a good move. Let's put this guy Dowling with all that height. Let's put him at one of the corners and just roll it. It can't get any worse.
But they tried to start Dowling, and
it can get worse.
Well, you know something? Maybe we got to leave him out there for a game or two. Let him get his feet wet. I mean, because what's going on out there now is really bad. And now we blame the safeties, Wilson in particular, for what happened with Rice. But if you look at the amount of time it took the play to develop, you'll realize that the quarterback had a lot of time for this guy to make a double move and go down, which goes back to another thing, fourth quarter pass rush. We don't have a pass rush when it really matters, and it's been killing the team because they really can never get guys off the field in a critical spot with a pass rush. And then lastly, when it comes to Wes Welker, I know Brandon Lloyd's there. The guy's good. But you take Welker away from this team, and it's not the same team. I hate to quote Deion Sanders, but pay the man. Thanks, guys, and have a good day.
All right, Patrick.
And I want to piggyback.
Pay him before he dies.
Patrick's 4-minute offense point, and we talked about how good the offensive line has been pass protection-wise, and I totally agree with Fred. I think they were very good. Andy and I, we used the tackles as one of our on the rise, both Vollmer and Solder. But you know, the 4-minute offense, the pass protection has been terrible, and not just on Sunday. It was bad against Baltimore, where he was under the gun, got sacked once, had to throw one away on third down. He got sacked on Sunday in the last drive. He had to throw one away in the previous drive for the intentional grounding, the second one. So even that, something that was been pretty good all year, it's been a total systematic breakdown offensively when the games have been on the line. If the game has been close, they haven't been able to perform the way they did in the first three quarters.
And the pass rush thing it sounded like they were playing the run. That's part of may have led to a bad pass rush is they had in their minds that they were setting up to defend the run.
I think they did.
That might be part of it.
Yeah, and that's part of what I'm talking about. I think that's bad coaching because I think if you want to let a team on the 46-yard line with a minute 18 left run the ball, here's your 10 yards. Go ahead and take it. You know, if you let them go 46 yards, then that's ridiculous, right? Regardless of what defense you're in. But they're not going to beat you by running the ball five times there.
Don't let up the big chunks. Joe in Michigan writes in, that was definitely a depressing loss. After each loss, I don't read or listen to anything Patriots-related until Tuesday, when I know you guys can bring me back off the ledge. I've been a fan of the Patriots.
Check back tomorrow.
I've been a fan of the Patriots since 2001. I'm only 22, so I haven't experienced this too often. The worst team I can remember is 11-5, and I am now wondering if they will even reach that mark. before the season, I predicted 13-3, and they have to win out to get that. I think now at best they can go 12-4, but I'm hesitant to even say that. The secondary is horrible. We can't even be confident against teams we know can't throw the ball. I hope you guys bring the therapy today. By the way, love the cover. Rain delay is very clever. That was Andy.
Andy. After explaining it to Fred.
No, he shot it down the first time.
Because he didn't get it.
Make any, right, and then I had to spell it. Oh, yeah, yeah, I like it. Is the secondary worse this year than last year? Is that where we're going?
What do you think?
Up to this point, it hasn't been, but it's trending poorly.
Yeah, I would say no right now.
Yeah.
I would say
but
no.
But it's trending
poorly. But is the
poorly.
Secondary better, or did they get a little bit more pressure on the passer than they did last year?
Well, I mean, that's part of it, you know, so... But the evidence there is that so far they've been okay, but it's getting worse. It's getting worse.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to remove that last play from your head. Yeah. That last play is just like this glaring wham.
But it just seems like last year is the same thing. You know, last year was more focused on safeties, and it wasn't necessarily because of injuries. But going into the season, it doesn't seem like Bill Belichick knew who he had back there. And he's still trying to figure it out. You know, for the second year in a row, we're mixing and matching now going into week 7.
But I think they're mixing and matching because of performance.
Well,
I think he had an idea of who the guys were, and they haven't performed.
Well, if that's the case, then he didn't have an idea. He thought they were going to be the guys, and they turn out not to be the
guys. Well, that's certainly the case last year, in my opinion.
Right.
And you James Sanders and Brandon Merriweather if you have no idea who you
that's
have.
That's exactly what I'm talking about. I don't look at it the same way this year.
Really? I do.
This year, well, part of it is injury. You know, Gregory,
yeah.
I think he thought he was going to count on Gregory, and he's now missed a couple games, plus. I don't think he knows what he has at corner, and I don't think he should have. I mean, Sterling Moore, we were all like, yeah, he played well down the stretch last year. Let's see if he can be good. Well, you didn't know. I mean, he was a practice squad rookie right. who made some plays. You couldn't have felt confident of what he was going to be moving forward. He couldn't have felt confident in what McCourty was going to be this year. Arrington kind of is who he is. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, He hasn't been great all along. They've tried to replace him every single year and just haven't been able to do it.
I think Dowling might be a guy that they thought more of than they've gotten so far this year.
But even then, like, it started in camp when he started moving down the depth chart in camp.
Yeah. You know, last year he started in the starting lineup. This year he was out there right away as part of the first group, you know, the nickelback or whatever it was on opening day. And now he's an afterthought. He barely plays any defense.
And he's not
snaps.
Even hurt.
No,
the guy who's always hurt, who, you know, if he can stay healthy, you got a steal of a pick here. You got a top 10 corner. You know what? He's healthy.
Now you got to think he'll be healthy for a while because he doesn't play. What's he gonna, I mean, unless he gets hurt in practice like some of the other guys.
His sarcasm meter is on high today.
I just want to, you know.
Because you had to draft the rugby player in the fifth round.
But I guess you guys are right about it being a little bit better. Like, for example, their performance against Arizona. Now, a terrible passing offense with Kevin Cobb, but. To hold Larry Fitzgerald to one catch in that game for 4 yards, they couldn't do that last year.
Right.
They didn't do that to anybody last year. Even the Tyler Palcos of the world completed passes. They at least have moments this year where they've been able to corral pedestrian passing games.
Pass defense didn't suck in the middle of the game.
They couldn't do it on Sunday, but they have done it this year. They didn't do it ever last year.
But the point there is it makes the point about the four-minute offense or defense even more strong. When they game plan, when the job going in is to shut down a guy like Larry Fitzgerald, they were able to do it. But when things break down at the end of the game, when all those plans are out, you know, and all the teams have, you know, gone through their playbook, and now we're winging it because things have changed, guys have got injured, you know, the situation is now different.
It's a great
that's
point,
when
Fred.
They're not doing well.
It's a great point.
Might be the greatest point he's ever made.
But
on
you know
this
what?
Show.
But that was true in so many different levels. Think about if the Arizona game unfolded like the Seattle game. How many catches do you think Larry Fitzgerald would have ended up with?
Right.
Yeah.
If Arizona was down 13 in the fourth quarter and they were throwing it every play, there's no way Larry Fitzgerald would have finished with one catch. He finished with one catch because Arizona was thoroughly in control all day. They didn't have to force the ball to him because they didn't need him.
Right.
That's a great point. They start off, you know, obviously this game was all Marshawn Lynch.
Right.
Right? And they did a great job of taking him away. But then when it gets to the players making plays and not the coaches putting him in the right spots, they don't have the talent.
Things will break down, right? Let's go to Steve in Toronto. Hey, Steve, I think I saw your city from the plane.
Oh, well, It's a pretty one from up there.
It is.
Downtown, not so much these days.
Oh, no?
Toronto's not near Seattle.
No, but except when you're going across the country, dummy.
You were at 30,000 feet.
No, when we went over the lakes, I think I could see Toronto.
It's hard to miss the mistake by the lake.
Yeah.
But the situation Cleveland? I have, guys, I don't know if you've spoken about it yet, but it's basically the way that first half ended. I mean, yes, we have a situation where we're coming down and, you know, we end up with the intentional grounding call, but for me, what really kind of sticks is the fact that the timeout was not called until 16 seconds. When I look back at the play-by-play sheet, I mean, I'm seeing they started that first down pass to Welker, started at 40 seconds left. How does it take, you know, down until 16 seconds before somebody recognizes that we actually need a timeout in that situation?
Yeah, Bill admitted that. He said that, you know, they thought, the thinking was they were going to get up to the line quicker and get that play up, but then he saw what was going on. They saw that Brady was going to ask for an alignment. He said, I figured I better cut my losses and call that timeout. So that was a miscalculation. They thought they were going to get ready for that next play a lot quicker and save the timeout, and Belichick saw that wasn't going to happen, and he called it from the sideline.
Well, now I just wonder, is this something that's, you know, maybe a little bit of complacency on Brady's part, because he just seemed to be, you know, just kind of walking up to the line. There didn't seem to be any sense of urgency at all in getting to the line. I mean, even getting up there and downing the ball. I mean, saving that timeout if necessary, but just the seconds that actually ran off that clock. I mean, if we take it back, I'm not sure how many seconds that were actually missed on that play, waiting for the timeout to be called, but, you know, do we come close to maybe saving that 10-second runoff?
Badly managed. There's no doubt about it.
It was actually, Steve, you make a great point. Andy and I were all over it live. What are they doing? Why are we waiting so long? 21 seconds went from they took over the 24. They threw a pass to Welker for 15 yards, 21 seconds before they called timeout. And then they similarly let a couple of extra seconds go off after the next play, which was 6 yards to Woodhead. They had the ball at the 3-yard line in two plays, but somehow only had 12 seconds left.
Right.
And that's not Patriots-like clock management. The same thing happened the week before against Denver at the end of the half when they sort of put themselves in a bind running those hurry-up plays instead of calling timeouts, and they ended up running the ball and getting stopped. It was curious, to say the least, for a team that prides itself so much on those situations.
So are we putting that on Belichick, or are we putting that on Brady?
I think both. I think it's
a joint venture.
I think it's a combination. I think in this case, Brady should have had his team up to the line a little quicker.
Should have called timeout.
Yeah.
They had two.
Even if he thinks he can get up to the line quicker, he needs to realize it isn't happening. Timeout.
I think they're so cognizant of this whole thing at the end of the half. The scores have become the be-all, end-all. Scoring at the end of the half and leaving no time on the clock. I think that they take it too far.
And how many times has it potentially come back to hurt us now? I mean, we're sitting with three losses that, you know, everyone speaks of, you know, as potential wins. So are we managing the clock as well as we should? And again, I bring it back. You know, are we maybe a little complacent in the way that we go about things, and it's that ho-hum, we've been there, done that, and we're just going to do it again? I want somebody that's going to go out and actually attack it.
Well, the thing about that, the only reason I would say, Steve, the only reason I would say that's not the case, the ho-hum, we've been there, the only guys that have been there that have done that is Brady, really, on offense. None of these other guys have done it, so they should not be complacent, and there should be nothing about ho-hum about winning football games. So, you know, I just think it was Brady screwed up. There's
I agree.
No doubt.
And it happens. He's human.
He screwed up in the
But panic. It's him.
Yeah. And he screwed up where he threw the ball when he threw it out of bounds.
I think that one was on Brady. I absolutely agree with Andy. I think he's got to call timeout there with two left.
But I also think because at the point at which he throws the ball away, and I said this to Paul, you know, the easy thing is you got to throw it to the corner. Well, I think if you throw it to the corner, the time runs out because it's going to take longer for that ball to get to that point.
That's true.
I think the screw-up is he literally has to say, if I don't release this ball at a one count,
right,
I have to release it at the two count.
You wait.
I throw it away.
Yeah. That ball's got to be thrown immediately. It's get the ball, back throw. Foot, plant, throw.
And throw it no matter
else,
what.
Right. If it's anything else, That's not good enough.
Either right. throw it to my receiver because I think right. I can complete it, or throw it at his feet and we kick the field right. goal. So, right. so he had a terrible stretch there yeah. of 35, 40 seconds.
You're rolling the dice that someone comes completely open immediately.
Right. right.
I have no problem. I know I'm in the minority on this. I think that they had enough time to run a play with 6 seconds left.
It was poorly executed.
It was poor execution, not necessarily right. a coaching decision. Problem. Now, the coaching and the preparation to get only 6 seconds, I think, as Steve
terrible.
Pointed out, was terrible.
That's where they screwed themselves, and they wouldn't be in that situation. You know, he said maybe you have the time for the 10-second runoff. No, that wouldn't even be a consideration
because
he wouldn't
yeah.
be throwing it away no
right,
matter what.
Right.
It would be a whole different butterfly
right,
effect
exactly.
there.
Right. Even if there was like 9 seconds left.
Right.
You know, so
that
the 10 seconds.
Then he looks.
Then he looks and
right.
looks, and you can find somewhere right. to throw it away right. properly. Because if you looked at that play, Fred,
I think Gronkowski was open.
It was
broke late.
It
That's
was
the problem.
It was
9
like
or 10
Super
seconds,
Bowl.
It might be a touchdown to Gronkowski.
Right.
At 6, it's not. And that's why I wouldn't have run it, because to me, there plays take a little bit to develop. And to say, yeah, somebody's going to flash open early right when he needs to throw it, plant, throw,
bang.
I just think is a real risk. And really, the chances of that happening are pretty slim
and I'll tell
in
you,
that situation against a good defense with big, long corners. You know, how often are you really going to flash a guy mm-hmm. so you throw it? Take the points, go to the locker room happy with 3, and don't try to be too cute.
And the other reason to back up Andy's point right there is you're playing an offense that's going to struggle.
Right.
You're not – 3 points right. is important. And there are some games that you play, and you're like, well, we got to get 7.
Right.
We got to get 7.
Well, yeah, just
but
that day.
That wasn't one of them. Threes.
You look at 3 as nothing, so you're rushing to try to get 7. Seattle looks at 3 as, wow, we scored. Nice. That's a lot of points for us.
Right.
Like, that's a big deal to them. So the more you add to you, even though you feel like it's a loss and you could have gone for 7, is a win against a team like Seattle.
Let's go to Larry in Miami. Hey, Larry.
Hello, Larry.
Hey, guys.
Hey, Larry.
Ho hum.
You have to talk me off the list. I'm on the top floor. I'm at work right now.
Wait a minute. You're at the top floor. The window's closed.
Yeah, the window.
Okay, good.
Jump.
But yeah, man. I just felt when we gave the ball back, the way he was throwing those bombs all day. It's just like. Playing against us, just throw the ball up. You just get a pass interference, so they catch it.
Yeah.
And it's getting ridiculous, and the safeties is not there where they need to be. And I blame this on Belichick. This one, Brady did throw his interception, but I blame it on Belichick because if they willing to put that defense, the rollout with their defense every week, and knowing that at the end of the game, yeah, we made plays, but at the end of the game, if it comes down to stopping the team, you know we're not going to stop them.
Yeah.
You know, we have to do something about it, and we got to change those corners.
I think I figured out a new player for the Patriots. You know how they have specials? You have a long snapper.
This ought to be good.
We have a new player who's called The Voice, and this is a guy whose voice is projects so well that he can stand on the sideline and tell the corners when to turn. And he can yell, and they'll hear him. And so we have one guy on our team that's The Voice, and he tells the corners when to turn.
Like the first base coach. Back!
Well, I don't think about that guy in that last play because Sidney Rice was open. He just went right past.
Oh, yeah.
Open. Yeah, there was no turning the head necessary
no problem,
on that
No
play.
Problem turning the head on that play.
Right.
Yeah, because that was crazy. But there's some corners that's on the free market, like McFadden, who used to play for Pittsburgh, and they were talking about Bowman from Chicago. They say he's a decent corner, at least. We need something out there. So that's what I was calling about.
All right, Larry. Thanks for the call. Larry in Miami.
Well, I'm all for it if they have all these guys they're not willing to play. If you're not willing to play more, well, then get rid of him. If you're not willing to play Dowling, then get rid of him.
Yeah, and find someone else. Maybe you do.
Maybe
Larry's,
you catch
maybe
Sterling
right.
Moore yeah. from last year.
You
get
find
the guy.
Someone that can contribute.
Now Jordan is
and
from,
before you get him in your system and then he regresses in your system, you can get something out of it.
There's Jordan's from Oklahoma. Again. Now, did you
that one was intentional?
Did you actually mean to call the next show, the John Rook show?
No.
Oh, okay. Because didn't Oklahoma just pace Texas?
Yes.
Oh God, yeah.
Yeah. But I'm from Oregon, so I don't really care about Oklahoma.
Oh, okay.
Oklahoma.
You're from Oregon, but living in Oklahoma.
Yeah, yeah.
Calling the Patriots.
That's a common one. That's a common one. A lot of Oregonians. A lot of transplants in Oregon transplants.
From beautiful Pacific Northwest to whatever Oklahoma is.
Yeah, exactly. So I was actually at the game, and that is by far the loudest stadium I have ever been in.
That is the general consensus. Yeah, we talked to one of our cameramen who shoots for Comcast, and he said that's the loudest he's heard. The only thing that I could even get him to say might be comparable was the old RCA Dome, Patriots, Colts, NFC, AFC
indoors.
Championship.
Plus,
but
they were
even
pumping
that,
in noise, Fred.
And that's it was a true. Small dome. It was right. even smaller than the other, so everything was really just reflected back
right.
in. Other than that, everybody is on board with that Seattle's the loud-ass
place. And
there's
sustained noise. It's when they're in the huddle. It's when, you know, it's not just at certain times. It's throughout.
Right, and it's yeah. what I joked. He said, well, it looks like we were up in the stadium. It looks like we could put those little roofs on to reflect the noise back down. I go, yeah, but are you going to ship in the fans from Seattle who are loud and know when to be loud? Because that's what you need, too.
Yeah, yeah. They were crazy. Okay.
Are they
so
mean?
My thing is,
wait. You spend are they like, cuz you know some crazy fans
mean.
Are like mean and were they, did you feel comfortable or were they antagonistic?
Throughout the game they were fine. They were really nice fans throughout the game, but once they beat us, then they were a bunch of a-holes.
Wow.
So they took their cue from Richard Sherman.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, go on with your point. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
Okay, so I have, you know, obviously the defense gave up 14 points in the last 7 minutes. You can't do that. That's just, you can't do that. But I have a problem with the offense. We always say the number one offense in the league, but they had 3 possessions, and they didn't do anything. They had 2 3 and outs,
and four
you know, the last possession with the minute and 18 to go. How can you not do anything?
Right. You know, Andy and I were talking about this. They've had a lot of these games that they've blown the lead. I think one of the underplayed parts of it is the Patriots' offense has gotten the ball back after that with enough time to do something. And when was the last time they did something?
Right.
After blowing a lead in the Super Bowl. They had 30 seconds to go down, you know, or a minute in this most recent one. They had a minute to go down and do something. This game, a minute and 18? That's a good amount of time.
What do they all have in
to
common?
To do something. An Aaron Hernandez drop?
Not Josh McDaniels.
Oh. I suppose you could say that Josh McDaniels was at the Super Bowl
right.
last year.
Well, he was some sort of consultant or he had some sort of role.
I suppose you could say
but
that.
Yes, the Aaron Hernandez one bothers me because it felt just like the Super Bowl. He's crossing, boom, you hit him right in the hands, and it literally goes right through his hands. That's why I have trouble pinning this all on Brady. He lost his magic. Well, right. You know what? Jermaine Wiggins and J.R. Redmond and Troy Brown didn't used to drop those. And, you know, Grant Williams or whoever the hell the tackle was at the time didn't give up more pressure late in the game seemingly than he had. All. This is a systematic failure of everybody. Except Wes Welker, my guy for the day.
And, Paul, you mentioned this play earlier. We only tried to go deep to Brandon Lloyd one time, and it was that very last session down the sideline. And that was on the sideline that I was on, and I was watching Brandon Lloyd from the beginning. He beats the corner, and he slowed down. I watched him with my own two eyes. He slows down. Brady throws the ball. Lloyd looks back and realizes he's going to get the ball. So he starts speeding up again, and obviously he has to dive, and he doesn't make the catch. If he didn't slow down, I don't know what would have happened, but it would have been a big game.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. I don't, you know, I'll take your word for it because we don't get to see if he slowed down. But clearly when he dives and makes the catch, he's out of bounds. And if he didn't slow down, maybe he wouldn't have had a dive and he would have been in
stride.
Bounds.
Right.
Yeah, so that's a valid point.
It would have been in stride. And it just
so he's dogging it.
Like,
maybe he just figured he ain't going to throw it to
me. He's not throwing. He hadn't thrown it to me all day except when I run back shoulder fade.
Lloyd!
He's sulking.
Thanks, Jordan.
That's Paul-like tone right there.
I liked how he put that, though. If he hadn't slowed up, I don't know what would have happened.
Yeah.
Jürgen
don't be so emphatic.
Jürgen from Denmark, right?
Jürgen Flürgen.
He says, I still don't know what to say about the Seahawks game. The Pats are becoming unwatchable.
Ooh.
I remember a great statistic about Bill Belichick being something like 66-1 when leading the game going into the fourth quarter. But ever since Brady came back from his injury, the New England Patriots have become the greatest choke artists in football. There is no big lead enough. There is no lead big enough for them to defend. 13 points against a rookie quarterback, not enough. 9 points against the second most overrated team in football, Baltimore Ravens, not enough. And I'm not just talking about the worst pass defense in history. It's just as much the offense failing to produce when it comes down to business. All this talk about mental toughness must be directed at the fans who have to sit at the edge of their chair knowing that we need a three-score lead to be able to make it. Here's the blueprint for beating the Patriots. Let them have their fun in the first three quarters and then score the points when you need them when we choke in the fourth. Wow. Jurgen from Denmark.
I thought they were much happier in Denmark.
Who's the most overrated team?
You street moles and drink your Zimas and Smirnoff ices. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Who's the most overrated team? Baltimore was the second most?
I think.
Was he saying the Patriots?
Yeah. Patriots are the first. Yeah.
Is this Jimmy Haslam?
Yeah. On the screen here? Why? You don't recognize him without a hat on like Woody Johnson?
No, this is going to sound very racist, but he's much whiter than I expected. Like, the only other Haslam I know is Adonis or Adonis Haslam.
I know other Haslams.
You mean Udonis Haslam?
Yeah, him. Yeah. I thought Haslam was like a Muslim or something name.
No.
This guy's like this guy. Well, I was actually thinking, the NFL is diversifying its owners, and it's another rich old white guy who's joining the club.
I didn't know anything about him, to be honest.
Zach from Syracuse, right?
Zach from Syracuse.
The more I watch this team, and specifically the secondary, the more I think that the problem is coaching, not so much talent and personnel. And no, I do not want to replace Belichick. It just seems like the secondary has been so bad for so long, no matter who is playing, that it has to be more than the players. I especially don't like how we ask both safeties to play strong and free. Chung's strength is in the box, not in coverage. I'm not panicking.
That's
it's
Belichick.
Only October, but I think we are one and done in the playoffs this year.
Well, then you blame Belichick, because that's Belichick's thing.
That one got under Andy's skin. He was rearing to go that whole email.
I try to be consistent. When it's good, I say Bill. When it's bad, I say Bill. I'm not going to rip Josh Boyer and Brian Flores and these guys and say they need to be fired. No. I'm going to give Bill the credit and Bill the blame, and right now we're in a cycle of Bill the blame. You're 3-3 after six games. It's Bill's fault.
Mike and Charlotte, guys, obviously the secondary is terrible. Arrington is the most frustrating player on this team. They keep running him out there, and he sucks. I know they don't have a lot of options, but this guy has to go. What would their options be if they move McCourty to safety? Does this make sense? Should they just bite the bullet and get the younger guys in there and try to improve as the year goes on?
Well, the question there is, for me, are Gregory and Wilson better than Moore or whoever you're going to bring in at corner when you I guess Wilson could go to corner. Technically, he played corner in college too. But, you know, are the guys you're going to put on the field at corner better than who you're replacing at safety by moving McCourty to safety?
And the whole younger thing, I mean, basically you're saying, do I put a second-year guy in there instead of a third-year guy? Or do I put a rookie there instead of a second-year guy there? You know, I think, for the most part, they're all pretty young, except for Chung is the elder statesman,
right?
And he's not been around very long.
And he's negotiating his $40 million extension.
You know, and Gregory, even though he's been around the longest in terms of NFL experience, is new to the team. So, I know that we're getting a lot of McCourty to safety as the quick fix. I didn't necessarily think that was the quick fix last year. Am I alone in that?
Yeah.
I didn't notice a marked improvement in Devin McCourty's play as a safety.
But maybe on a situation like they had at the end of the game, maybe that's a time to move McCourty to safety.
Well, I do wonder.
And bring in a cold corner.
One of the emails brought up the whole Dowling thing. Would you be willing to say, hey, listen, let's put Rasai Dowling out there and just say, you're starting at cornerback and you're going to play?
Sure.
I mean, they said it couldn't get worse.
Yes, it could.
I think it could, but
I have my doubts about him being a big stiff corner.
How about Wes Welker at corner?
He might be better.
Let's
get Julian Edelman back out there.
I wonder if you can do that. Well, he's too valuable to the offense.
Oh.
I wonder.
How come, Paul?
Wow, sarcastic.
Because he had a good man.
Comment number two.
No, that's number four. Or maybe five. I lost count.
I was a little frustrated after this one, Freddie. I'm not going to lie.
Asher in Illinois reminds us that Crapshoot got hit in the face with a football.
Oh, that was just wondrous.
Yeah, it was
wondrous.
A little unfortunate. A, it was a glancing blow. And B,
he handled it well.
Oh, yeah.
They were calling him Marsha Brady.
Oh.
But, yeah, he handled it pretty well. If you watch the whole clip, he did a good job. I give him credit.
On a separate note, says Asher, should we be worried about the ground attack and Stephen Ridley? I realize that the Seahawks have the number one ranked defense in the league, but only 34 yards with a 2.1 average.
That'll go up this week. Don't worry.
Yeah, they're playing a team that is at the bottom.
And then they got the Colts
defense.
Coming.
150
you can run
yards
on
a game.
You'll be fine. You won't prove the thing we want them to prove, that you can run against a good run defense when you need to run it.
It remains a concern, and that's the whole part, the gimmick thing that I'm talking about. Do they have to sort of get you when you're not ready in order to get yards on the ground? And, I don't know. It's still a work in progress. But, I'm not overly concerned about Ridley specifically, but I'm concerned about the team's ability to run the ball when it has to.
Hey, it was wet out and he didn't fumble. Thumbs up. Adam's in Virginia. Hey, Adam.
Hey, guys.
Hey, just two really quick things. I missed most of the show, so I'm not sure if anyone covered this, but on the grounding that cost us at least 3 points in a game that we ultimately lost by one.
Yep.
I don't know if you guys noticed it or if I'm making a bigger deal out of it, but did you notice that Branch was trying to run a quick slant? That ball probably would have been over his head, and he was wrapped around the throat by one of their linebackers. I forgot the guy's name, number 50. They didn't call holding. At the time, I didn't get that mad, but I remember I said to my wife, I'm like, well, when they ran the time off, I was like, well, if we lose by 3 points or less, then you're going to hear about it at the end of the game. And I haven't heard a lot of people talking about it.
Well, yeah, I mean, I guess I did hear about that, you know, he was held on that play, but Brady wasn't going anywhere near him. I mean, he was throwing it away. So
it's, you don't think maybe he was just kind of like, all right, well, maybe I'll get the holding call. I'll throw it where that guy's supposed to be. You know?
No, you've got to throw it closer to that. He was nowhere near anyone.
Yeah. No, if he had been free, Brady would have hit him, but it wasn't in the spot where Brady threw the ball.
No, he was throwing it away.
Yeah. So,
I didn't see it.
But I'm all for the refs screwing us. They probably did.
I didn't notice Branch on that play. Yeah. But I'll take your word for it.
All right, Adam. Thanks for the call. Adam in Virginia. Got a lot of emails. Let's get to them. Andrew writes in about Sunday's play calling. I know I've heard you guys consistently defend play calling with the fact that the players don't execute. But after Sunday, come on. 6 seconds left in the half, tight window for time in a loud stadium against a team with a solid defense, and Brady throws right up the middle and intentionally grounds the ball when all his receivers ran outside, kicked the field goal. Third and one within the Seattle's 10 in the second half, and Brady throws an interception, run for the first down. Third possession of the game with around 5 minutes left in the fourth, or third to last possession of the game with around 5 minutes left in the fourth. After running successfully for first down and two plays, McDaniel sends the offense into a five-receiver set. Why? Run the ball. I'm honestly furious about this loss. The secondary was excruciatingly terrible, as always, but made more than enough plays for the offense to capitalize. And in my opinion, stupid play calling did cost us that game. P.S., when I tweeted you guys saying McDaniels was borderline paid off, I was obviously joking, sarcastic, but that's how stupid I felt some of the calls were. Very poor outing by McDaniels and Brady.
Okay, I just want to, you know, the whole play calling thing, you can't have it both ways, all right? And here's the situation. He's right. On third and one from the six, they threw the ball, got picked off in the end zone. So the next possession, because they got fortunate, they let up, I don't know, something like 55 yards in that ensuing drive, but after the first down, Zach Miller fumbled.
Right.
So they got the ball right back and drove right back down the field. They got in the red zone. Third and two, what did they do this time?
They ran the ball.
And what happened?
Ridley got stuffed.
Nothing. So you're complaining about the no running on third and one, like that's the magic elixir, let's run the ball, and you got picked off. So you run the ball the next time, you get stuffed for nothing, and you ended up kicking a field goal.
And wasn't that
so? You can make the argument, well, if you didn't throw it, you wouldn't have got it intercepted, and you could have got 3 points. You would have won the game. But that's, you're looking for a touchdown.
And wasn't that interception a deflection?
Yeah, but it was a terrible play. It was a terrible throw. He threw the ball 800 miles an hour off Welker's shoulder. I mean, he had no chance to catch that ball. And then, by the way, as you said, Fred, earlier, then he got blown up.
Right.
After, I don't know if you remember that.
No,
he got absolutely blown up after that get. After that deflection, and Earl Thomas picked it off in the end zone. So, I get it. You can nitpick, and I have nitpicked the play calls. I think that against Arizona, there were some play calls that left a lot to be desired. And by the way, I've had enough of the third and long runs. I know they've gotten a few of them here. I've had enough of them. Like, to me, the result of the play isn't the be-all, end-all to me. On third and seven, I don't want to run Danny Woodhead.
He did play well, though.
He made a good play on that run.
And why? Because he's back in the role we want him in. A handful
effort.
Of carries, a handful of
it
catches.
Freddie, you're absolutely
Danny
right.
Danny Woodhead.
On that play, you're absolutely right. I've seen enough of it. I don't want to run Danny Woodhead on third and seven. Not when I have Tom Brady. If I have Russell Wilson as my quarterback, by all means, run somebody else on third and seven because he has a better chance. Tom Brady gives you the best chance of getting more than 7 yards.
Hey, in crunch time, I always say, give me Wood. Bill's
That's
in Beaver Creek, Colorado. Yes, I know it's been a while, but I've been listening, and I have a concern. Back in the dynasty years, one of the things that made Belichick such a great coach was the ability
talent.
To pull Joe Schmuck off the street, plug him in, and continue on like nothing was different. We'd get production or at least solid play out of that player. I mean, if you stopped and thought about it, you could probably think of a few, but that's the point. You'd have to think about it. So what is different now? Supposedly, we have more talent than the man off the street. Is it a learning to play thing, learning to play together thing? Was it more the coordinators like Romeo Crennel and Charlie that made no name serviceable? Has Belichick changed his philosophy in that regard? Is it even something that is philosophy related? Or dare I say, have we come back to earth after 10 years of being dominant? I'm concerned, guys, but it's still the Patriots. We still have the best QB in our generation, at least. And I'll take Belichick on his worst day over every other coach in the league.
The answer is talent. You had more talent on and off the field at that time. I'll go and, you know, we had an Ask PFW today that said, you know, would they be better with Crennel and Mangini? Yes.
They would be.
Because you'd have two good coaches with good experience who were developing into good coaches. You know, as much as we may think Patricia's a good young coach, he may not ever be as good as Romeo Crennel. He may never reach that level. Boyer may never reach Mangini's level. So, yeah, I think you'd be better. But I also think it's easy to plug a guy in if you also still have Rodney Harrison or you still have Ty Law, you still have Asante Samuel. They don't have anything they can count on in the secondary. It's what we talked about earlier. Paul wasn't willing to label one person that could play back there, could play at all, a lick.
No, who was the best?
I think, right, you said they all suck. I'm not taking anyone.
Yeah,
you took nobody over somebody.
Yeah, I think McCourty's probably the answer, but I have a hard time saying that he's the best.
Dennard is making an argument.
Well, I his sample size is too small. That's
right.
All. He only played two games.
But that's my point. You say you're more talented. No, just because they drafted some first and second round guys doesn't mean they're more talented. And on the whole, they're far less talented because they lost the proven presences that were around those
people. And it's not even just the secondary, too. It goes so much deeper than that. I hear all the time, this is a team that won a Super Bowl with Earth, Wind, Moreland and
Hank Poteet.
And Hank Poteet. First of all, no, they didn't. But anyway, you hear that all the time, but it just completely dismisses the other 8, 9, 10 guys that were healthy that were out there, like Seymour and Warren and Wilfork and Brewski.
I've heard his name a lot this week, obviously, because of what happened with the safeties. But you just take one guy, Rodney Harrison, and none of that happens on Sunday.
I think there's an argument for that. That's what Andy just talked about.
Experience, yeah. You know.
But so, you don't have that guy.
So they were banged up in the secondary, and they plugged in Troy Brown in Earth, Wind, Moreland at times, and they got away with it. Well, why did they get away with it? Because the front seven had five Pro Bowlers on it. You know, that's why you get away with it.
And, you know, we have some Hall of Famers coming up in our linebackers, but they're not there.
They're in Fred's Hall of Fame.
They're not there yet. James Pettigrew, the most interesting Patriots fan in the world, says, what do you think Seattle's record will be at the end of the season, and will they make the playoffs?
7-9 and no.
Oh, really?
I don't know.
I think they're going to go to the Super Bowl. We're going to meet them, and we're going to give Dick Sherman his comeuppance.
I don't know their schedule.
I don't think they're very good.
Can you imagine a Super
I know they
Bowl
haven't
week
played
with,
San Francisco
with Pete
yet.
Carroll at the microphone every day and Dick Sherman mouthing off all week?
Dick Sherman.
That would be fun. That would be great. I hope they get there, and I hope we meet them.
I hope they get there, too.
You know?
Boy, would I be wrong if they got to the Super Bowl.
I love Jicks as well.
I think they can be a winning team, especially, you know, I'm
8-8 tops. 8-8 tops for that team.
Who do I like more, them or I like them more than Arizona, definitely.
You think 8-8 tops for them, Seattle?
I don't think that's a very talented team. I don't. I think they have a couple of individuals on defense that are intriguing, but I don't think overall. I wasn't overly impressed with the whole performance. I know. Listen, it's sour grapes. I was wrong. I let me stop here. I was wrong. I didn't think they could beat the Patriots. They did. I sound like a whiny baby. I'll stop.
Steve writes in, good morning, PFW from California. Very, very disheartening loss to lead pretty much the entire game and then lose it in the last few minutes again. This felt like the Baltimore game all over. I have one question. I would like to hear your opinions. What the hell is Josh doing? I don't understand it.
Boyer or McDaniels?
McDaniels
getting
McDaniels.
A lot of heat.
I'm sorry, but it seems like we've lost the desire to go for the kill and finish the game with 5 minutes left. We are up by one touchdown, and he tries to run out the clock. I'm sorry, running the damn ball twice for 1 yard each and then getting forced into third and long is not running the clock out. That is effectively turning the ball over. We had moved the ball effectively all game with the pass. Why in the hell did we all of a sudden decide to, he says something around, fool around in the middle of the field. All we needed was one more first down. Yeah. Why not run it on first, then try for a short throw on second and third if you need it? I just don't get it. Okay, I'm done ranting. It was very frustrating watching this happen again. I'm sure you guys are frustrated too.
So basically the problem is he ran it twice for a yard.
Yeah, but see, that's my whole point about the whole thing. They can't have it both ways.
Right.
We
had he run it twice for 8 yards.
For 4 years, all we've done is say all this team can do is throw the ball. And when they get in a situation where they have to protect the lead,
right,
they don't run it.
Right. And then they.
So they're trying to run it more this year. And we've talked about it. Andy keeps using the same phrase. You can't just flick a switch. You have to run it. Well, they haven't been able to run it when the other team's thinking the run is coming. We've seen that so far. Small sample, 6 games. But generally, when the other team is expecting run, it hasn't been successful. What do you want them to do? If they threw the ball 3 times and took 30 seconds off the clock and didn't make Seattle use any timeouts, you'd be sitting there saying, why didn't they run the ball?
Right. It's execution.
Like against Baltimore, they ran the ball once and they went right to the pass and they got sacked, remember? And what was the criticism? Why are you not running the ball? Why not give them a chance to run the clock out?
Right.
It's execution, not plays. Listen, I think there's a lot of things to complain about because that game, there was a lot of things to complain about. Second guess, nitpick. John Rook's going to have a field day coming up, but they needed to get more than a yard on those 2 carries. You can't run it for one and run it for one if you expect to be a championship caliber team. Set up a 3rd and 5. Set up a 3rd and 4.
Right. Chad writes in a couple thoughts. 1, give Wes his money. 2, why did Brady not quarterback sneak on 4th and 1? And 3, the problem seems systematic. When they win, all sides of the ball contribute, and when they lose, every side of the ball falls apart.
That's good.
If the secondary fails, then it seems that the defensive coordinator or that DO coaching, I guess defensive and offensive coaching, can't absorb the mistake. If the problem is systematic, there is no fix except taking some power from the chief. What if Bill gave the offense to Josh so Bill could focus more on the defense? I think he has.
I do too, for the most part.
I think that's what he's doing.
Not necessarily maybe on Monday or Tuesday, but the rest of the week, I think it's basically Josh's.
I'm real concerned about this week's game. It's not going to be pretty. It could be the worst case with the Jets 3-3 and the Patriots the same. They are going to kill each other out there. Thank the Lord that we have the right refs to deal with the bloodbath. And F the Jets. I agree. What do you think is going to be an overly physical game, you think?
Well, because I think both teams will run the ball, yeah. I think that lends itself to being a more physical game. I think the Patriots will get your running game going this week that everybody wants to get going again.
It's a good week for
28th ranked rush.
150 yards a game they allow. And you got to figure Rex is going to go in and sit there and say, I can't let Tom Brady just throw it all over the yard.
Johnny in L.A. says he hates everything right now. Welker choked in the Super Bowl. Gostkowski choked against Arizona. The entire team choked against Baltimore in the fourth quarter. The defense did everything in its power to choke away the Denver game. The entire team, coaches especially, choked against Seattle. Belichick has choked on 90% plus of his draft picks. PFW choked when it chose Adam Jones to host the pregame social.
That was Fred.
I hate everything, but Patriots 27, Jets 22.
I'm not sure how much better that score would make me feel.
A Jag Fred? Home win against a Jag team.
Yeah. I just want to win at this point.
But so you're not concerned at all about how?
I think the Jets.
You turn into the. I mean, I understand Belichick doesn't need to be concerned, but
they plastered the Colts last week, which, you know, the Colts are still with the rookie quarterback. But the week before, even though they lost, they stepped up. You know, in a bad situation, and they competed. So I think the Jets still can compete with any team in the league. You know, yes, they lost Revis, but they still have a pretty good defense. And, you know, I expect...
Name their top 2 receivers.
Well, they got that curly guy, and, you know, they got Cumberland Farms.
Tight end.
Stephen Hill would have been the other answer.
Yeah, but
now, I'm still scared of that. Even though they have no receivers, I think both Curly, I can envision both Curly or Hill
Curly
torching
across,
them.
Curly across the middle. Hill just say,
right.
you go down there.
And you have to. You have to say, Stephen Hill, pretend you're at Georgia Tech again, and we're going to just say, go. And when I say go, you run straight down the field, and at least 5 times we'll throw it to you.
I'll tell you why I don't fear the Jets. because I think they'll be too stubborn and they won't do what everybody else has done that's had success against the Patriots and say, you know what, I know that we do this, but against this team, we just need to chuck it. They won't.
Anybody who doesn't drop back and chuck it is trying to lose to the
and
Patriots.
And this team will not just drop back and chuck it because they don't trust Sanchez.
You lose then.
That's what I'm expecting.
Thanks for playing.
Dagmar's in
Imagine
Miami, Florida. Hey, Dagmar.
Jets.
3-4.
What's up, guys?
How you doing?
Four more to go.
I'm having a better weekend.
Yeah.
I went to a game on Saturday, and similar outcome of the Patriots game on Sunday. So double frustration on the weekend for me. I got a couple of questions for you guys. You probably may. I don't know if you talked about it already, about the first one, because I've been in and out trying to listen to the show today. The first one is more like a logistic question regarding Brady's helmet for this past Sunday. Was there any reason for the change of helmet that he wore for the game?
Well, I guess I've read that he has experimented with new helmets in the past and then goes back to his old one. And then this was, you know, a newfangled helmet.
You read
helmet.
That from me.
did I?
Yes.
I knew I read it somewhere.
Yeah, he's done it in the past, and he's gone back. But, I think everybody in the league would like all the players to go to the more modern helmets. I think they would prefer that they have the better designed helmet. You know, it's not proof that it's going to make it better for you. And he has said in the past, you know, I've never had a concussion or whatever with this helmet, so it seems like it's doing the job. Well,
he got whacked pretty good.
Yeah, and you know what? Yeah. He may not wear this one now because, see, I never got hit hard in the face with the old one.
Right. Yeah, and you, Dagmar, to just, I think where you're going is after that hit, that was like the last play of the third quarter or late in the third quarter, and from that point on, the numbers dropped off the cliff.
Yeah.
And he had a lot of bad throws.
Yeah.
He had bad throws before, too.
He did. Yeah.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I do remember, I think, watching old videos of him on his rookie year. I think he wore a different model of helmet than the one that he has traditionally played with, more like a similar, like a Revolution model, the one that Peyton uses. And I remember seeing him probably a couple of seasons ago during the off season or training camp trying a new helmet.
Yep.
Or one of those editions the Patriots today. I remember seeing him with a different helmet. But that's not a big deal. I thought it was more because of probably the new helmet has a better speaker system inside, and due to the conditions that the stadium was going to be loud.
No,
all the speakers in all the helmets are exactly the same.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And the second point will be actually regarding the first scramble play by Wilson, where he almost got sacked. I think, I don't know, they didn't show that many replays of that specific play. Maybe I'm recalling it wrong. In the wrong way, but I for some reason I think there was a Patriot player that, in my opinion, got blocked in back right before he was able to tackle Wilson, just 2 yards after he had taken off for that big scramble. I don't know if you guys have any access to the film or to that specific play. If you can go back and actually see what I'm actually saying is correct or not, that I'll appreciate it.
Okay. We'll do that. We have that All 22 film now with that app. We can check any play we want. First thing I'm going to do is check out that the intentional grounding to see how badly Deion Branch was held. And also I'm going to check on the other pass interference that wasn't called on Branch in the middle of the field.
Eric said that was, you know, should have been called.
Well, he does the
cost him the game.
Analysis story.
Yeah.
He still thinks they got screwed on the field goal in Baltimore.
Every post-game analysis after a loss is focused solely on officiating, which does wonders for our credibility.
He's right.
First of all, Eric has no credibility.
Yeah, I know, but it's on Patriots.com.
I don't think anybody lumps him in with us.
Did you see the
That's the team that complains about the officials after every loss.
Did you see the field goal that was missed this weekend in the final seconds? Was it Philly? In their loss, there was a field goal that was missed, and we looked at it.
Was it Dallas?
Yeah, the Dallas game.
A lot of teams.
The Dallas game.
A lot of field goals.
We looked at that one. It's like, if that one missed, then the one in Baltimore certainly missed.
Oh, it wasn't the Dallas one. The Dallas one was about 8 miles wide.
No, this was like, you know, over the top again. I forget which
They're
game.
They're not all the same.
This was
the camera angles are not the same.
This was the same.
No, because you have no credit. Speaking of lack of credibility, you have none.
You know what I'm laughing at? Is the Cardinals was the huge one. Feely made a 61-yarder with a minute left to tie the game. Then they forced a 3-and-out, used their timeouts, got the ball back, and got a 31 or 32-yarder chip shot inside 40, and he hit the upright. That's the one I'm thinking. He's probably saying,
no.
Oh, that, if that was you, guy.
No, no. Let's see. Frank writes
Clanked it off the upright.
Frank's upset. We have become a one-trick pony on offense. Pass, pass, pass. Unless we are playing a horrible run defense, up and down the field, no problem. But once we need to play to score in the red zone, we are predictable and easy to defend. Why is it we can no longer make in-game adjustments? Used to be when we came out at halftime, you had the confidence adjustments would be made if needed, and there would be a follow-through. Brady lazy? Been there too many times to keep the fire roaring?
Yep.
Yeah,
yep.
Sure, there is a consistent little flame. Belichick?
Ooh.
Seems like he has long been figured out. Used to be one step ahead of the league, now just in the pack. Men, I know things have been great for a long time, but the Kool-Aid has some mold floating on top. I thought time was what we needed, but it turns out it is better. It is be better scouting and the ability to realize good is no longer great in this league. Wow. Frank just really upset. Wow.
I actually think it's the opposite.
40-14 last 4 years.
Who?
Patriots. Regular season. 40-14. If that's everybody catching up to Bill Belichick.
3-3. 3-3.
Let's go back to the phones. Noel is in Denver. Hey, Noel.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good.
Hey, great show. I got a couple of comments. I'd just like to listen to your response on them, if I may.
Sure.
After living in Denver here for since 2001, all I heard was bashing of Elway and all this other stuff going on, even though they love him. But the thing is the coach doesn't win the football games. They either have a great quarterback or a great defense. Now, every team needs a coach, don't get me wrong, as per Drew Brees and the New Orleans Saints. But I really believe at this point in time, these guys got to coach up. Brady, as far as I'm concerned, he should go down. I lived in California for 26 years. I watched Joe Montana. He should go down as the greatest quarterback of all time. And he will, especially when he wins another Super Bowl. But I have a problem with Belichick getting too big for his britches. And you watched Stokely last night against the Chargers, sign Welker. Let's get this team cohesive and keep things moving forward.
Okay, Noel. Thanks
for that. I'd like to know your response to that, if I may.
Okay.
Sign Welker. I'm all for it.
I think
I'm sort of lukewarm on it.
I think that a coach in this league.
Of course you are. You already gave him $50 million last year.
I was waiting.
Makes a huge difference.
They need somebody in that role.
And the Patriots are lucky they have Belichick. There's no doubt about it.
The coach.
But I do think there is some truth to it. You know, at some point the players have to take responsibility. I doubt that the coaches, you know, Belichick in mind is telling him, you know, go ahead and let that ball go over your head.
And Wilson took responsibility. Yeah. Wilson said, simple coverage,
because
I got beat.
We've seen for our own eyes the situational practices where every little stone, you know, nothing gets left unturned. Every situation is you know, gone over in practice. And these guys are just, you know, coached like that. These are just mental errors.
Which makes it more disappointing when you have something like the end of the first half where you know they have done it thousands of times when you're talking about Brady. Not all the players, but the most important one has done it thousands of times on the practice field and on the game field, and he blew it. It was a terrible, terrible series for him.
You know, and how many times have we seen it?
And I'm confident we're not going to see a lot of that going forward for the rest of the year.
You better not.
But why do we keep seeing it in the games that are close
late?
That's what I'm asking. I'm not talking about every game. I'm talking about there's a commonality in close games late.
I'm talking
we don't handle them well.
Yeah, but I'm talking about particularly Brady blowing it.
But that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I don't
see the offense late in close games has been spotty.
Yeah, but I don't think a lot of it is like Brady.
But see, to me, that's not just Brady.
Yeah.
That's what this was just Brady.
But
you know what? The wins are not just Brady either.
No, I'm talking about situationally. The end of that first half to me was all Tom Brady. It was a bad decision on the throw, and it was bad decisions to make Bill call the timeouts when time was already wasted.
That is all Tom
Brady in a situation we've seen out on these practice fields 8 billion times.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree.
The difference is the end-of-game stuff, I don't think it's just Brady.
No.
I think the tackles are playing worse. I think Aaron Hernandez is dropping passes. I think it is a group effort.
Right.
It's a systematic failure.
Right.
You can't even throw Josh McDaniels in there if you want to include him. I know the fans hate the coordinator, so.
I agree.
John, are you changing your show from nitpick to Everything Sucks Tuesday?
Well, he is wearing all black.
Yeah, that's
his morning
clothes. My morning clothes.
He just came from the morning walkthrough with the Friars.
That's got to be it.
Peter Better and Jay!
That's got to be it.
And everything.
I have nothing to nitpick. No. What's wrong with the world?
Right.
I think nit implies it's small. This is big picks.
Well, yeah, these are big picks.
But you know what? We are overdoing it a lot. It wasn't all bad.
Oh, it sucked.
It's just at the end, you know, they...
All depends on what you think of Seattle.
You know?
I think nothing of them, so to me it was wretched. That's my problem.
I have to agree with Paul. I didn't think much of Seattle before the game. I thought their defense was certainly better than adequate. Their offense, to me, wasn't even really NFL caliber.
No. There was just so many.
And you got beat by Russell Wilson. And traditionally, you know, the Patriots have made mincemeat out of rookie or young quarterbacks.
How about
and they
the play
did not
before
do that.
The final drive? There was a third down on the drive before, you know, when the Patriots actually came up with a 3-and-out initially. Third down, he throws the ball down the sideline.
Yep.
He throws it about 8 yards to the left out of bounds.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a laughable throw by an NFL quarterback.
Yep.
I don't think the secondary should laugh at anybody.
And we lost to this guy.
Yep.
I mean, it's just pathetic.
The more that you let it sink, the more that you realize there's just no way that it should have happened. But it did, and so in that regard, it is best to put this one in the rearview mirror as quickly as possible.
This is the real wake-up call, like Buffalo and Arizona and Baltimore. This is the real wake-up call.
Well, but you have to hope that at some point in time, Fred, that there is some response, and if the Jets... And thank God for Rex Ryan
sooner
already.
Or later, wake up.
Snap you out of your coma?
Well, yeah. I mean, come on. If he didn't snap us out of the coma, I don't know who the hell
would.
The
good news is the stretch of the teams with absolutely no pulses upon us.
There you go.
The Jets, the Bills, the Colts, the Rams. No chance.
All right. John Rook standing by with the playbook. And after that is Fantasy Football Champs. Answer all your fantasy needs. I know you guys are in the throes of your season. So, you'll definitely need the help of Todd and Bill at 4 o'clock. John's up at 2, and we will be back on Wednesday. See you then.
That was another unpredictable edition of PFW in Progress, the podcast for informed Patriots fans worldwide. Like what you heard from the PFW boys? Then support the show and follow your team even more closely by subscribing to the paper that makes the podcast possible, Patriots Football Weekly. Get your subscription right now by calling 1-800-494-PATS or by logging on to pfwonline.com. There's even a web-only international option for Patriots fans outside the U.S. PFW in Progress, brought to you by the writers of Patriots Football Weekly.